What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 105. There you go. So I'm waiting for the screen to come show up. 105 of Valuetown. I'm Chanman V, and Noxious is to my left, and then Saw No Ray. Raven is our guest today.
You're the one.
You're the one. Oh, I actually. Oh, whoa. I think. Hold on a second. I think that messed up there. Okay, there we go. Yeah, so guys, Saddle's having some internet issues, so Raven was nice enough to come and jump in his place, even though we were been talking about asking you anyways, so this works out perfectly, dude. How you doing, man?
Yeah, really. I actually just force disconnected Saul's internet so I could get onto the show.
It seemed to work.
So, but yeah, I'm doing really good. I've been playing a hell of a lot of Hearthstone this week. So
really awesome.
I'm happy. Yeah,
perfect week then to have you on.
Yeah.
Noxious, how you been, man?
Been good. I've started. I'm bringing back some Randuin action in my daily routine when I play Hearthstone now, because I really want to play some cool, fun stuff. And there's actually like a weird, interesting list that I'll present to the listeners and the viewers with Randuin, like a Randuin theme to it, while still being, you know, semi-competitive in the teen ranges, which is fine for fun decks.
A little bit of Randuin in your life is what we all need in our sense. Yeah, I've been playing same thing. I've been playing a lot of priests and pretty close to the one that we talked about last week, but very, very greedy, and I'm like, oh, you know, I'm going to play a greedy deck this week, and I'm going to expect to lose. But funny enough, it didn't happen that way, and we're going to get a chance to talk about it more during our week of Hearthstone. But yeah, so we're going to be talking about, obviously, a lot of decks that we played, as we always do, and just what we've been doing with just the game itself. Tavern Brawl a little bit more, since, like, well, last show, Tavern Brawl literally just came out, so we didn't get a chance to talk much about the 10-card Discover Tavern Brawl. We'll talk about the North America versus China crazy fiasco in just a second here. That was pretty interesting. And then we're going to introduce a couple of segments here, topic and tip of the week. Figure we would maybe focus on a specific topic in regards to the game or maybe something that's going on, and then we just kind of dive into it. And then tip of the week, anything that we've got that maybe some of the casual or newer players getting into Hearthstone could use and maybe help them get going and becoming an awesome Q&A, of course, at the end of the show. Email your questions to valuetown@chanmanb.tv. If you want to get your questions in for probably next week, I think we've got a couple already for this. But in the future, if you want to get them in, go ahead and do that. But let's start off with talking a little bit more about the developers, since they seem to be communicating with us a lot now, you know, in terms of text and video and interviews with other websites. And the latest, we actually have an interview with Tim Clark, you know, from PC Gamers. Ben actually gave an interview here, and he talked about a few other things that weren't brought up in the developers. It's Developer Insight, right? Yeah, Developer Insight that we had the previous week. So I figure I'd bring up a couple of these. And so they actually bring up, all right, the whole question, is it patches that's the issue or is it Buccaneer that's the issue? And Ben went ahead and said that he thinks that Buccaneer is the issue. And I think all of us agree that if you're going to choose between the two, it's going to be Buccaneer that you change. I know what you could change about patches. I mean, it's like he's a 1-1 already and he's got charged. I mean,
he's already bad.
What else would you do to him, right? I mean, make him 2 mana. I mean,
yeah, I mean, there's pretty much just no realistic change, right? At all. Whereas Buccaneer, there's actually a lot you could mess with.
Yeah.
In Buccaneer and actually make it more feasible to be a card in the meta at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. So it doesn't sound like it's going to be happening anytime super soon. But it does sound like they're taking a look at it, and I wouldn't be surprised if we actually, you know, maybe in a few weeks, but definitely not like 1 or 2 weeks or so. Whatever. So, I'm happy about that. It'd be nice to see just Buccaneer maybe reduced in health, or even in maybe his attack even reduced. Instead of 3, it's 2. Interesting, too. What do you guys want to see? Like, how would you like to see that card nerf?
The small-time Buccaneer?
Yeah.
I mean, one of the easiest nerfs or changes would be to force, because it's meant to be a pirate card, right? Where you play it in a pirate deck, ideally, instead of it just being a patches enabler. So maybe it just gains extra attack per pirate you have. Or if you control, you know, two pirates, it just gets an extra an extra buff, or like plus one attack per pirate, or if you control two pirates, you get plus two attack. I don't know. Just something that has to do with pirates, because the fact that it's weapon-based makes it really difficult. If you make it a 1-1, it's horrible. If you give it only plus one attack, it's horrible. So what the fuck? Like, I can't think of a solution that involves keeping the ability tied to what it already does.
I'm just wondering if, like, in a very simple way, just if you give it one health, like, how much does that change? Because say it's like the pirate versus pirate decks or whatever. Well, mm-hmm. whoever goes second can just kill off the Buccaneer anyway,
right?
Which
right.
is normally quite easy. Mm-hmm. And then also just there, you know, mage ping it done. You know, Shaman of Maelstrom, which would yep. clear that, which is an issue. He's doing the two damage, right? I feel so. You know, I think it would still be played in like the like Pirate Warrior, for example, like because it's just yeah. go face. Who cares? Sure. But they might scale back some of the rest of the cards. If you look at Swashburglar, when that's played on turn one as rogue, you're never like, oh no, you know, like this game's yeah. going to be over in two turns, because one damage is very easy to do in almost every class.
Right.
So I think that would be pretty reasonable. Still has the high damage output, because at the end of the day, it does require a weapon, which is asking something of the player. But I think the one health would be fine and very straightforward.
Yeah, it's like Flame Imp right now in neutral is just not a good thing to have. Like, you just don't want to give a Flame Imp to every class that can enable it in any way. So I agree that, you know, 3-2 is just over the top. But 3-1 is like, you know, would you play a 1-mana 3-1 in an aggro deck? You probably would consider it. The issue is...
Especially because it's if you're playing Pirates anyway, it has other synergies, right?
Right, exactly. So if you're playing like the Captain in the deck, or if you're playing all Patches that comes out of the deck, that's already like a 1-mana 4-2 baseline. If you consider patches being brought out. So, one health might be okay.
Yeah, you definitely play it in an aggro deck. I don't think there's any question about that. But to your point, with maybe half the classes being able to deal with it, or you know, at least deal with it from the standpoint of tempo with a hero power, which every single one of those classes will be able to do that, that definitely brings the power level down just a slight bit. Which a lot of the matchups, when you're talking about the ones with pirates, some of them literally do just barely kill you. So it might actually bring it down to a reasonable position. But yeah. I don't like the fact that we call these decks pirates just because we've got three pirates in it. Yeah, that's like the lamest thing ever, right?
Well, it's more like it's four to five, actually.
Yeah, I guess
like
maybe five real if you're talking decks. About But Swashbuckler, yeah. they're not playing it because it's a pirate. I mean, there's just, you know, there's other reasons to play it, right? For the draw and everything. But so,
yeah, I guess.
Kind of, I don't know. I don't feel like it's like calling a dragon deck when you only run like five dragons. And
But I you think know. You would, like, that's the thing though about Swashbuckler is it's a great card, but it's also not really useful unless you've got stuff to counter with it to bring patches out. Like, you know. If you really want card draw consistency in your Miracle Rogue, maybe you'd actually opt to just run, you know, another counterfeit coin. Fuck if I know. If there's no patches for you to bring out, then you don't care about that general pirate package.
Yeah.
Then Swashbuckler is a lot less appealing, and it's more of a card you can include for value purposes later on if you play, I don't know, Bran in the deck against certain matchups. But it's not like an auto include. Whereas when you start running, you know, a small time Buccaneer and patches, suddenly the natural inclination you have is I need more pirates to make sure that patches comes out a lot earlier and a lot more likely to come out than off the top of my deck, and thus Swashbuckler becomes an inclusion. So,
yeah.
In that respect, I agree that it's not a pirate deck, but it also you know, the pirate tag does have quite a bit of value even on these minions.
Yeah, well, purely because of patches, but yeah. Okay, so it doesn't sound like they're going to 100% do it, but. You know, it's like, I'd be really surprised if they didn't do something, because there's nothing that's going to change unless there's a lot of new cards that come out on the reset, you know, with the new expansion or whatever, or the new adventure that has something that deals with Small Town Buccaneer directly. Otherwise, it's like, what's going to change? Everybody.
I mean, there are cards that deal with it, just not on curve. Like, there are a lot of cards that deal with Small Time. They just don't deal with the remnant patches. That is it. That the biggest issue is you can deal with one or the other.
Right, but you have to think of it.
To kill both.
But you have to think of it with both now. Like there's no point in thinking of it individually, because individually they're fine. Like individually their cards are okay. It's just a combo.
I think as well. One of the problems is that the whole strength of Buccaneer is having a weapon, right? Because that's what buffs its attack. If you play a minion that tries to like counter the Buccaneer, well, the weapon normally just kills that minion, right? Because you're always doing it on like the backswing, so you're always like a turn behind. And the second the Buccaneer gets like two straight hits in, that is huge. Like six damage, one mana, and it's got some form of trade or removal. Like that's insane. But it also in terms of future expansions, limits any low-cost weapon that is printed, because then it just becomes even more ridiculous. You know, here's more easy weapons to equip. Look how good Buccaneer into Jade Claws is. Like, it's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. If they do that to any other class, it's just, it'll just blow it out of the water. It's crazy.
I mean, it reminds me a little bit of Spirit Claws in that way, because you can't print cheap spell damage minions. And one of the worst things about Spirit Claws is when it's bad, it's pretty bad. But when it's got spell damage to go with it, Jesus fuck is the snowball real, because they not only get a crazy weapon, but they also have the spell damage available to buff up their spells. So it's like, when Spirit Claws isn't working, you know, with a spell damage buff, it's not really that appealing. But the moment it becomes good, it becomes too good.
I would never say Spirit Claws is
pretty bad. You would never play upgrade for the sake of upgrade. Like, you would just not. But the point is, the potential upside is so crazy, because you get to protect, you know, you have your spell damage totem, which you get to protect, and then you use that with Maelstrom Portal, which is a cheap spell. You have Lightning Bolt that can suddenly snipe stuff like Tomb Pillager and high health minions like Wormist Agent. All of that combination is just a bit too much, right? So it's like a card that comes in with a built-in snowball mechanic like Small Time Buccaneer with weapons, where if it's good, it's too good. And if it's bad, well, you know, you don't really care about it.
Double snowball with the way Spirit Claws is now too.
Right, and now it's like Spirit Claws gets like the spell damage and the Small Time Buccaneer. And that card has become, as a result of that, like, it's just completely fucking crazy. But Jade Claws is still better in a lot of instances.
It's not even about, it's not even about, well, it's the fact that they have so many different instances where they have a one or two drop that's power, or one or two turn. It's powerful, is why. Okay, well, anyways, moving. Well, go ahead. Yeah.
I was just gonna say, I think when you start seeing almost any deck that can, whether it's mid range, late game, or aggro, run this composition of pirates is when that, you know, it's gone a bit too far, right? Because it just doesn't. You know, we saw like Life Coach at one point experimenting with the pirate package, not so much Buccaneer, but the pirate package in Reno Lock, like. You know, that's to the extent it gets a little bit quick, just to counter.
Yeah,
you know, the
it's more
playing
for
pirates.
It's defensive reasons.
Crazy,
actually. Yeah,
right, it's crazy.
And that's why. And that's why it's like, even some classes that, you know, we talked about Hunter last week, right? Like, what I think the question was would Hunter be good if we had a two mana weapon? You know, like Godzuka was, and you know, for me, the answer was yeah, it'd still be fine because. It's more for a defensive reason. It's not necessarily you're going to get the edge, you know, higher percent of the time. Of course you won't if you don't have a one mana weapon, but you're going to have just enough to at least play the defensive role, and then you can, you know, maybe flip it.
Hey, Chairman, come on. If Hunter had Glaive Zooka back, I'd be putting those bloody pirates in that Hunter list.
Oh, no, I'm saying no. What I'm saying is, like, you would. Right. It's just...
Yeah.
And what we were arguing is whether it would be good or bad, you know, or how it would compare.
I think it would be bad, but, you know...
I actually think it would be good, but...
Sure. I just don't think a two mana weapon as the starting point is enough to make that package good. But
you have a three mana weapon too, so it's a little bit later. Well. Yeah.
Importantly, you have a 4/2 Buccaneer on turn two.
I know, right? Right. Exactly.
Nuts.
Okay. Well,
sounds balanced.
Yeah. Well, in this interview, we kind of move on. They talk about some other things. You know, talking about whether you take some nerfs off of some previous cards and. Doesn't really answer that too much, but the question does come up about, you know, nerfing cards versus just moving them to wild, and it is pretty clear that they want, you know, they like to just move stuff to wild.
Yeah.
And Rag came up. Rag has been you know, kind of coming up in discussions again since, you know, we're seeing it in some competitive events. I wouldn't say we're seeing it nearly as much as like Azure Drake or anything crazy like that, but.
No, but it's definitely a very played as far as legendaries go, right?
Yeah, legendary wise, sure. Yeah, Rag. Rag for me is such an iconic card for Hearthstone. Like, it's hard for me to imagine. I mean, I know it's an RNG. It is like the quintessential RNG card we've had since the beginning. But it's hard for me to imagine Hearthstone without Rag. I don't know. How do you guys feel about Rag?
I mean, I'm the same. Like, it's such like it's such a huge character in Warcraft anyway, and it's so good. But I think that I'm a fan of change to a large extent, and there's been some people like knocking around ideas of should they not quite Rag as the example, but all the core set legendaries for the classes, should they just get rid of them all to wild and bring in new ones, like a new core set of legendaries, which would be cool. And they could, you know, maybe do something similar with some of the legendaries that are neutral, just whip some out and put some new ones in as like core set neutral legendaries. Because I think the volume of legendaries available is good. I think you want a lot because a lot of them do really weird things.
But I
definitely think, like, I would be okay with Rag going into wild, just because I like the meta, like, moving and changing.
Sure.
I don't really like it where it's like, oh no, this card, don't get rid of this card because then this class will change. Great. Like, that's good.
Well,
like,
yeah,
I
exactly.
think it's great.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's I mean, Rag isn't even a class card, so it's even more okay and from that standpoint, right? I mean, me too. I mean, I definitely like change too. It's just, you know, wild. We don't really see too many things going on in wild right now, at least from the standpoint of very, very public, very large scale events. So it won't be removed from the game by any means, but it's pretty much just going to be under the covers and only played by wild folks. Maybe arena folks too, right?
Yeah, but I think as time passes, wild is going to get more and more popular, right?
Yeah, arena might be coming standard. It might be coming standard, right?
Yeah.
So Rag is, you know, is a card that's been around forever. We can say the same thing from Sylvanas.
Yep.
Those cards have been just the ones that you tell people when they're first starting off they should get, because it's just generally powerful and never really gone away completely.
I think one of the things as well is, like, do we really want Rag, Sylvanas, and all that to be in the set in 3 years' time? You know, is that really what people want? Like, you can love the card, and I love the card. I got it in gold, you know, I think it's great, but, you know, the game's got to change. And if you keep, that's one of the issues that have been brought up a lot, right, in terms of the classic set sticking, you know, potentially forever. So, you know, I think it's the same issue with the legendaries too.
The game needs to change, but they need to, I mean, the reason why I think it's so slow for it to change is because they have this notion that they don't want, they want people to be able to come back to Hearthstone and still have some familiarity with the cards that they were once playing, right? And Rag and Sylvanas are definitely those cards, and they even still have value in it. And if those cards are completely gone, you know, thrown into wild, essentially you don't have the same value. And
how about, and this is something like I'm a fan of, and I wish they would do more. They've done it once, and I think it would be great if they just released a new version of Ragnaros that did something different. Like Light Lord, but like that's like class card and stuff.
Like,
but
they move Rag to wild and they create a new Rag, like, that does something.
Do they create it or do they actually, like, Rag is like a shifting Xeris that's in real time changes, you know?
They have core set classic Ragnaros in wild or whatever, and then they create like Ragnaros Molten Core boss, or, you know, whatever they want to call it. Yeah. That was a terrible name, but and it just did something.
It didn't get much worse, right? In terms
the Molten
of
Core edition.
Like, what are we doing right now? Ragnaros Molten Core.
You know
core.
What I mean? It could do something complete. It could, instead of doing the 8 damage, it could be a 4/4 that generates the
little emberlings or whatever.
The embers. It could create embers, you know, or something. Yeah. Something completely different, but Ragnaros is still in the game. Like, same with Sylvanas, right?
They're key
characters in the lore.
Yeah.
And, like, I wouldn't mind them sticking, but they should change.
Okay.
Definitely.
So here's a question. Because that'll basically tackle one of the questions that they have to then answer when they decide to do that is, do we want Ragnaros as a character to be in the core set, you know, and always around because we want people to be familiar with the character itself? Or do they want the effect to be around, right? Because maybe what they're really looking for is for people to come back, say, oh, I know what Rag does, you know, and just be familiar with not only the character, but exactly the effect.
Yeah,
I like the in-between where you keep the character around, though. Like, that's a way to keep people coming back and, you know, being familiar with it.
But that doesn't fix the issue that I feel like they're very cautious about. Like, you want people to come back to the game and still have that kind of value they left. You know, like, they still
throw them over to wild. That's what I say. Point them in that direction and tell them to go.
I know, dude. I'm just, you know, bringing up the point. I actually think they shouldn't. I mean, the game's supposed to change. I think people that leave the game and come back already have the expectation that it is. So it's fine to do that, but I feel like, you know, that is one very strong sentiment that I'd be, you know, I think that's one of the things that just keeps the changes moving slower.
Yeah, I think one of my worries with that, with the sort of that philosophy that they have in terms of getting some things to stick, again, Ragnaros is the easy example. And I think Brode actually even mentioned something similar in this interview, is every 8-mana legendary they design, is it better than Rag? No, oh, never mind then.
It's the standard, basically.
You know, yeah, is it better than Rag? No, well, I'll just play Rag then. Like, you know, and then they get into like really weird design points. It's the piloted shredder argument, right? Of like how they can't design something stronger because then everyone, maybe it's too strong because Rag's strong in itself. They design something weaker, everyone already has Rag, everyone will just play Rag.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing is that like Rag originally, when people were, you know, when we first were in beta and we were playing Rag, you know, Rag was like, okay, it's one of those like super control value, crazy value at the end of games. You know, it's like Ysera, you know, people were thinking that way. And then of course, as you know, people started to play more and more Hearthstone, it just became just a tempo finish, right? And that's what you end up having with these kind of cards that have a lot of value. Even Piloted Shredder is just being played in any old deck because of just how value. It didn't even matter if it was synergistic. It was just like
played in Face Hunter.
Yeah, it's just like the pirates and the warlock thing that you just talked about in Life Coach. It has like nothing to do with the rest of the deck, but you just play it because it has so much damn value.
Yeah, it's too good.
Yeah, we have to. I think we have to get away from that. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ragnaros is also one of those cards that, like, not only is it iconic, but it's one of those cards that creates more problems than it really solves in terms of competitive play. On one hand, you know, all the audience loves it and it's fucking amazing, but that's the type of card that has the potential, if it's, you know, too high in, you know, appearance, I guess, if it shows up in too many decks in competitive environments, then it just discredits the whole, hey, this game is really just about decision making. Because I wouldn't go as far as saying it's Yogg-Saron, because it isn't, but if you look at the very early days of Hearthstone, that card, like Ragnaros, was the biggest piece of RNG we had around, and back then it felt like Yogg, because that was literally like the moment in the game where you just threw your hands up in the air and said, fuck it, Hail Mary time, baby. And it happened every single game in the beta and afterwards.
Do you remember? Because everyone was playing Faceless as well.
Yeah, exactly.
It was always Rag, dude. Faceless Rag, cross fingers. Oh, it missed. Well, cross fingers. He doesn't hit mine.
BGH,
like,
no. It was like Faceless BGH. We're like, so stupid.
Yeah. It would be like Rag, and then it's like, okay, well, I play Sylvanas now. And then you're like combining all the crazy RNG.
Yeah,
it was crazy. It was pretty wild. It created some wild times, but at this point, 3 years out, you know, it's like the RNG's gotten a little bit, you know, or at least has kind of run its time, and it's time to get some just powerful cards that are interesting and require a lot of, you know, thought and, you know, skills to actually pull off. Okay, well, anyways, there's some other things in here. I feel like we've spent a lot of time on this already, but, you know, definitely check it out, PCGamers.com. Interview with Tim Clark, who's the author over there. But why don't we talk about the NA versus China tournament that happened all last week? And, you know, we actually saw some really cool matches from it. You know, we saw the one day where Sidonia like carried the NA team and just team wiped the Chinese team. That was pretty amazing. It's a good moment for Sidonia.
I'll take a split moment before we move forward to just say that Sidonia has been. Like, yes, but at the beginning, I feel like his play wasn't remotely as tight as it is now. Like, okay, I feel like he's just, because he won a tournament, right, back then?
He won like one of the Americas. Season champions.
Yeah, I mean. Right. But even after that win, you know, we saw him play, and I saw him play in other events, and I just wasn't quite convinced with the performance, because it was an era of Call of the Wild. That's what it was. It was like, oh, you know, I'm Call of the Wild, and you rip. Like, it was kind of a boring era.
I think
in many ways.
So in opening week for BlizzCon, he definitely had some. So even then, you know, after he qualified and stuff, he definitely had some shaky moments.
Yeah,
and I felt like he was one of the people who's very affected, like maybe even, you know, emotionally, and let it impact his play by what had happened. Like if there was a bad turn or if he slipped up, it would really throw him off. But it does. Every time I do see him play, it seems like he's just getting like so much better.
And, it's insane,
and like,
right?
So that's much more point. Consistent. Yeah, so much better. It's crazy.
So, just wanted to throw it out there. You know, this guy's definitely been putting in the work. When I initially talked to him after his America's qualifier, he wasn't too sure how seriously he wanted to take Hearthstone, right? Like, he wanted to join a team right away and just get into the game. But he didn't know, you know, how much time he would spend doing it, because for him that was kind of a side thing. He had a job already and was doing full-time work elsewhere as like a freelancer of sorts. So anyway, very busy guy, and apparently he's been, you know, stepping up his game, and it shows in the results and the plays that he makes. So just really hype, really happy to see that.
Yeah, definitely a really good player, and you know, like I said, just rising, especially in A ranks. I mean, there's a reason why he was chosen for the team, guys. You know, like, I wouldn't say Sidonia is a big name player that you just like, you know, want to be in an event to get viewership.
They,
so
they picked the top players from GOSU plus Reynard, right?
Okay, I didn't actually realize
they picked the top NA players.
That's right.
Sidonia's up there. Sidonia's exactly. Number one exactly. At the moment in the Americas region.
Yeah, so it was Frozen, Sidonia, Chalky, and Reynard.
Reynard and
just
Dog.
Reynard just, oh, and Dog, yeah. So, yeah, pretty, it was a solid team for sure. You know, with Reynard and Dog obviously having draw and appeal too. And in the end, you know, spoiler alert, the Chinese team ended up winning, but of course, not with some drama involved, which in a match with Chalky and who's the other player?
LVN? I don't know. LVG? LVNG? Wow, I should know. I was literally talking about this like a few hours ago.
Yeah, it's just slipping my mind.
It's like LVGN.
LVG, like Luge. LVGE. And so they had a match, and at one point, it was... I believe it was LVGE's Reno Mage versus Chalky's Miracle Rogue. And it was turn two. Chalky just happened to have Van Cleef in his hand, which isn't that, you know, that it which isn't that abnormal. You know, a lot of rogues obviously try to play for that. But he had that in his hand. And of course, LVGE had the Dirty Rat in his hand. And basically, he ended up playing the Dirty Rat, which ended up pulling out the Van Cleef, and obviously that gave him a big advantage at that point, because he didn't have much else except for spells in his hand. So the drama that came from this, or stemmed from this, was really in the fact that LVGE was able to hear something, you know, in terms of what was being questioned, and you know what Reynard actually tweeted about was that his teammates basically yelled at one point to, in a way, signify to play the Dirty Rat.
He hovered over the Dirty Rat.
And then he started yelling. And that was, you know, that was basically unfair. And you know, that's what ended up pulling out the Van Cleef and basically costing Chalky at least a big disadvantage, or putting him in a big disadvantage at that point. And, you know, since then, the players gave their statements. You know, LVGE said that... he indeed did feel something. He didn't necessarily hear his teammates, but he could definitely feel the crowd, you know, or some noise from the crowd, you know, whenever he was trying to decide on that. But I don't think there's anybody, any player that, or at least majority by a lot, would say that you don't play Dirty Rat in that position, especially against Rogue, where you have literally game-ending cards that could come out on Dirty Rat on turn two.
I think one of the things as well is Chalky actually kept two of his cards of his opening hand.
Right.
So
yeah, exactly.
Heaps versus Reno decks, a Tomb Pillager, Azure Drake, mm-hmm. Gadget Zan. Any of those come out, and you are in trouble. Like, you could lose the game. As much as he won the game from that Dirty Rat to a large extent, you can lose the game if any of those minions. And what is Rogue keeping against Reno, right? You know, it's going to be, you know, you don't really keep questing. You know, for example, it's not going to be a card you hold on to against, you know, a Reno deck in your first turn. Like, you're not really going to. So I think that was one of the issues, though. But I don't know. It was a production issue, in my opinion.
It was
an organization problem.
I think it's an organization. I think it's something that we could generally talk about, too, which is, you know, crowd noise. I mean, there are a lot of stages. I would say even, like, the BlizzCon stage. I obviously haven't been inside the booths, but I would be really surprised if you can't feel... anything. Like, you can't feel
the vibrations.
I mean, people are stomping on the ground and, you know, just like using, you know, like the sound noise makers. I mean, there's got to be some kind of vibration, some kind of difference in your environment that, and you know, that can be a little bit unfair. So really the question is I think we all can generally agree that we don't like to see, you know, kind of additional information given out like that, but at the same time, there are definitely plenty of other sports and games where the crowd is obviously a factor. You know, like when you have home teams playing, home teams, you got guys like yelling at them, you know, and like literally booing and making noises and like trying to screw them up. So what are your thoughts on that sort of thing?
I mean, I personally think the issue is really just like, from my understanding, the venue wasn't really set up so the players are separated at all, and that really didn't help. Because it's one thing to feel the crowd, and it's another to feel your team. You know, and maybe see them out of the corner of the eye.
I mean,
I think they were pretty close. They were sat like not far away. I think it's pretty close. Yeah, I'm doing this. Like, I'm like, I can show you what I'm pointing. They're sat like over there. You can see.
It's one of those things where maybe like it could have been better thought out. Like the whole crowd's reacting. The only way you're gonna make a tournament fair is you have people supervising the players while they're playing at home, so they're not on a Skype call with someone else. And on top of that, you have to make sure that, you know, there's no crowd available next to them. Like it's fucking ridiculous. Like to actually isolate them, even in the player booth, you know, they feel the vibrations. Like that's just not.
I think one of the issues is like, was there a need? And this is why I said it's sort of like an organization / production issue. Like, was there a real need for, while the game's going on, the players to be that close to the playing table when apparently there was no white noise in air? Yep. There was only the Hearthstone music and then the sound canceling headphones. And then the issue is, like, as you said, you can always, you know, I've used sound canceling headphones, and a lot of the time you can hear at least, you know, inflection and like, you know, mumblings and stuff. And the problem is, you know, similar to what you said, Notch, is if the crowd's shouting stuff, then you're like, oh, well, it, you know, it's going to change your play maybe a little bit, but sure. But when your team are sat very close, you hover a card and they go insane.
Yeah.
Well, you probably, you know, have an idea. But also as well, I think it was really bad out of this whole situation how badly the Chinese players have come off on this. Everyone is just like, oh, cheating Chinese players. But I'm like, I'm pretty sure they weren't cheating, in my opinion.
Not in a strict sense.
Purposefully. Yeah. I mean,
What really irks me, I guess, is like, this isn't even a marginally good play in any fucking circumstance, right? That's the only thing that gets to people, is if that play had been some kind of, oh, is he playing around Reno? No, he's going all in. All right, fucking fine. But you play Dirty Rat against a Rogue on turn two with only a Doomsayer as follow-up? Like, are you out of your fucking mind?
Well,
like,
this is such nonsense. You bring up a good point, because I think most Western players, even with, you know, whatever instinct they have, I still don't think most Western players would have made that play.
You can't even hand read at that point. It's impossible to have got like any fucking.
Yeah, because logic. I mean, logic just overrides it, you know, or at least the probability of it being.
Well, the worst part is the hand read was the other way. The hand read told
exactly.
You
that's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. I was like, so I think the Western, even if they were being given, it's like a poker player, right? It's like a poker player who has a very large percent play that's very obvious normally by the book, right? If you're playing poker by the book, you just make this play. But because of some tell that you suspect from your opponent, you make a play that's against whatever the book is, right? It'd be something like that. And for the most part, Western players, they don't do that. Like, it's very, very rare that I think they would jump on something that, I mean, it's a big swing. If you miss on Dirty Rat, it's like, it's a huge
you'd probably just lose.
Yeah, like, it's like a huge flip of the situation.
I think you had a forgotten
torch in your hand, because at least, you know, the 2/6 live for whatever reason. Okay, it gets killed by Tomb Pillager. At least you can finish it off on the following turn. Nothing but Doomsayer. I'm sorry, dude. No, just
I think though one of the issues as well is again, like, so I'm gonna try and like defend the players a little bit. Is that if you're sat, you're that player and you hear that noise when you have a Dirty Rat, you cannot remove that from your mind, right? That happened,
and it
will affect your play. And even if he thought, oh, I heard them shout, oh, I should Dirty Rat, then you can't really blame him, right? Like, he's just doing what he thinks is right. And if you hear something, you kind of unhear it or unthink something, right? Like, it happens. I genuinely think the issue was no one had thought about volume of the team potentially going crazy and sitting that close. Well, and like, what, that's the main issue for me.
When I made that point just a second ago, I wasn't implying that, you know, they were, you know, he was trying to cheat and, you know, like,
oh, that's what, yeah,
it's just for me, it was just like, ever. That just told you how definitive it was for him
that was the
case, you know? And that's like, that's very, you know, obviously concerning when you can relay it. That, I mean, it's not a question of, oh, it's more of a question of him mousing over. He's like, ah, and then like mousing off. Ooh. Like nothing, hearing nothing, and then mousing over. Ah,
it's like, if that happened, I would have just kept mousing back and forth on the rope.
It's so funny, dude.
Just to control the volume.
Hilarious.
But yeah, I think the biggest shame as well is for the tournament to end on that note when the tournament was so sick.
Overall,
the production was amazing. The format was cool because we had moments like Cydonia going insane. Mm-hmm. We had the Chinese players bringing decks that were like specifically targeting certain other decks, you know, to try and beat them out. Yep. It was really interesting and frankly a joy to watch up until that very end point where I was like, oh my God, they were so close. They were so close to just having a fantastic tournament regardless of who won. And there always had to be something, didn't there? Always.
It doesn't always have to be, but it seems to, yeah.
It feels like it.
Unfortunately, yeah.
It shows up a lot. That's Hearthstone.
So it's only going to be a topic this week. So, I mean, hopefully next time around, you know, when they do it, and I'm sure they'll be organizing some more. You know, they do something about it so that we don't have this kind of, you know, drama that actually delegitimizes or makes people delegitimize what was a great tournament. Okay, well, go ahead.
Very quick. I'm always really interested to find out or know if the production companies or whoever's actually running the show, like hires anyone or speaks to anyone from Hearthstone, casters, players, whatever, in terms of what they think of the layout and what any problems they foresee. Because I feel like not a lot of these companies do, and I feel like for want of a few questions, they could solve some very simple issues. Yeah. Like some very simple issues, and I feel like no one does it.
I remember StarLadder had a really cool setup where they would take two players and put them in a room of their own, and that was like, that's it. They're one, you know, they just
they're
in a room of their own. It's not always perfect because, again, the crowd, you can hear, you can feel the vibrations, but there's no team that can remotely look at you. Like, there's no possible eye contact or, you know, from the corner of your eye. There's nothing. Like, you're in that one little area.
A lot of that's like a visual issue as well, because you want them in the middle. People, you know, like, and have the stage effect to a certain extent. But yeah, that was just my last point.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to ever have a way to, you know, have the players be right up there with the crowd without it affecting, you know, having this be an issue. I don't know. I still like, you know, one thing about the, you know, a lot of esports events, I feel like there still could be a bit more engagement, you know, or not engagement, but like the crowd being a little bit closer to it all. Like right now, it is a way, you know, we have these booths in whatever game, you know, it could be League of Legends, whatever, right? Like we're totally removed from it and they come out of these things and, you know, it's not the same as being like a basketball game where you're like, you're sitting right there, like the action's happening literally right in front of you. And I don't know, there's
which DreamHack was it? Was it DreamHack Bucharest?
I don't know.
It was like, was it 2014 where the crowd was like
around
sat right around the stage?
Yeah.
Like,
that
looked
Bucharest.
Amazing.
That's what I mean.
That
from
looked
a,
amazing.
From
oh
a spectator,
my God.
I think that is awesome. It's just we have to figure out a way to do it without, you know, having these situations that can, you know, affect the legitimacy of the competition itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope somebody can figure it out. Anyways, yeah, it was a great tournament. You know, I still don't want to take away from it. You know, I think Firebat was casting it, right? I mean, he did a great job. I think a lot of people liked Firebat's casting there, and it was on his channel too. So,
yeah.
You know, definitely good job there. And who organized it again? Like, which company organized it? I forget.
So do I.
Yeah, I forget.
Let's go with Alibaba.
Alibaba? It might have been Alibaba, was it? It might have been Alibaba, actually. Whoever it was, definitely do it again, guys, because it was really good.
I think it was NetEase. Those are usually the guys.
Oh, yeah, NetEase.
Oh, it was, yeah.
I'm not sure if it was them this time around, but yeah.
Okay, well, why don't we move on to our Week in Hearthstone segment, where we talk about what we've been doing this week in Hearthstone. And let's start with the Tavern Brawl, since we didn't get a chance to talk about it too much. Did you guys get a chance to play a bunch of the 10 card Dude, discover one?
I played exactly one game.
Oh, God.
Yeah, for some reason, everybody loved the hell out of that brawl. I didn't have enough time to really get into it much.
It's fine.
What was the brawl for someone who never plays?
Oh, my gosh, Ray. Yeah. What kind of Hearthstoner are you?
Hearthstoner.
It was one of those Tavern Brawls where you create... It was like one of those X card meta game. Okay. So you have 10 cards, and in the past, you know, you would pick like 3 cards or 2 cards or something like that.
I did play the one with 2 cards.
It's similar in that regard. You pick 10 cards, but the cool thing is every time you draw a card, you get to discover them instead of just choosing, you know, having a random one given to you. So you could, you know, pick the one a little bit more situational to, you know, time. And so the first part, 10 card meta is just a cool thing in general. I think, you know, just it's different than, you know, obviously what we have with 30 card meta. And, you know, we get a chance to play around with all kinds of different synergies and just how they kind of stack, right? If you can have 3 of them, you know, that's maybe even more, right? So that was really cool. And then people experimenting with all kinds of different, like, cheesy, crazy things. Like, I was doing Elise for a while, so I would get so many monkeys.
Oh, my God, what the hell?
Yeah.
So did
that's,
you...
That's pretty fucking cool, actually.
When you discover, can you discover the same card, like, 5 times straight?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it's 10 cards, not like... You can only have 3 of each.
You never actually draw.
You just discover the whole time. Oh, sick. Yeah. Okay.
So you discover choice. Like, you get a choice between 10 cards.
Okay, that sounds cool.
So I played Everything Can Happen Shaman. Or Everything Is Awesome Shaman.
Okay.
So you just get a bunch of Murlocs and play them for free, and then you play that for free, and then you win.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty good. What were some of the other really good strategies? I think there was the Sorcerer's Apprentice, of course, you know, just crazy spells and things like that.
Fucking Tempo Ga.
Tempo Ga.
People don't know the words.
Yeah. I don't know.
Exodium Age.
Yeah. Like, anyways, I thought it was one of the best brawls, to be honest. It was, I don't know, like, let's see, what was the other one? The other brawl that I felt like, I still like the co-op brawl. That's definitely up there with...
I was so disappointed with that.
Really? I still liked it.
When they first announced it, right, and they were like, oh, it's going to be a co-op brawl. I was like, sick. It's going to be a big board, 2 people at the bottom versus mega boss. I was like, that would be so good. And then they were like, no, you just play this weird... like against this minion that just hops across the board.
I agree, man. Without a new UI, it feels like you're losing out on so much of the co-op. Because the thing about the presentation of it is, I feel like, you know, I get it. It's a card game. You want to be cooperating and, you know, pitching each other the ball instead of having them both be on the same side.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I feel like it doesn't leave much to like potential. Development in terms of, you know, free play co-op, if there's ever a game mode that gets
that. I was upset about when I heard it and they said, oh, you know, we're working on a co-op brawl, I was like, sick, because then I thought, well, if they can put 2 players at the bottom of one side of the board, they can put 2 at the top, and then we could potentially in the future see something like, you know, Life Coach and Tice versus JJ and Crane in a 2v2, like old school Yu-Gi-Oh battle, like from the series, like 2v2.
Right.
It would be so sick. I'd be like, oh, my God.
You guys had way more.
Yeah, and then my dreams were crushed.
I was not surprised that they were working in the parameters of the 1v1, you know, just game,
I,
right?
I was just disappointed. I wouldn't say surprised is the right word.
Here's the lesson.
I liked it.
For all you viewers, don't dream big. Because you're
don't
upset,
dream
basically.
Oh man,
don't listen to Taylor Swift.
Yeah, but anyways, this ten card meta or this 10 card discover thing, I think was one of the best ones by question, no question. And you can always tell when the community goes nuts about a tavern brawl for days, not just a single day, then you know it was a success. Hopefully, they'll do some more of it.
With the tavern brawls, I wish they included some kind of further reward, because you know did you play the Diablo one?
I
played the Diablo Anniversary one, and you're playing crazy cards, right? All like weird new cards and stuff, and it's awesome. And then I just killed the guy. I was like, oh, okay, got my pack done. And then someone told me, because the guy has like 3 or 4 secrets live, right?
At the start you're talking about the brawl with the Diablo. I killed it like Diablo instantly. Brawl. Yeah,
I did that. And then everyone was like, oh, you've got to find weird ways to prop the secret. The Calvin, so I was like, but I got my pack. Like, I'm done. Like, why do I need to go back? Like, but if they said like, oh, well, if you proc all the secrets, you get two more packs. Like some incentive. Because I was literally like, oh, I killed him way quick. Back to ladder.
I literally killed him in four turns or five turns.
I just wish they'd take it maybe just one step a little bit further, but it's fine.
I think
I don't know. I'm not a huge like rewards guy just in general in video games. If there's something you give me a reward for and I just don't feel like doing it, you could pitch more shit at me and I still won't log on to do it. So I just want like compelling content, and I think that Diablo Brawl was one of those. I just didn't have much time in the days that it came out to really sit down and get it done, which I regret now. Like, I wish I could just go back and do all that stuff, because I killed him with, you know, Pirate Warrior, and I was just like, oh, well, I guess I'm done.
Got him.
Yeah, there's nothing else.
Got my pack, baby.
No secret triggered ever. And I'm just like, okay, I guess it was just like a bunch of bad mage secrets. Turns out,
and it wasn't. They were crazy.
It wasn't. Like, it was all these cow kings.
If you got killed, you got resurrected, and stuff like that, which is cool. But I just thought it's cool. But trying to ladder might be cooler, so I'm just gonna go back over to the ladder and play standard.
I never thought I'd hear anybody ever say those words in a serious fashion.
I have a real issue with games that if I don't see any form of progression or goal, like that is a visible, you know, like some way, like I just lose interest. Like single player games, I love, but I play for a few hours, maybe even like, you know, 5-6 hours. I'm like, let's go back to my multiplayer games. I can beat someone up, like, you know, beat someone at something.
So you need some account progression on some, like, in some form.
All right. Yeah. Well, why don't we talk about some of the decks we were playing this week? Let me go to the deck view. I'll be honest. Like, so I didn't actually bring a deck to discuss this week because I was just basically playing that Greedy Priest I was showing last week, which... last week I had just started playing it, like maybe the night before the show, so I didn't really get that many iterations through it. But that deck, which, you know, consisted of your Yseras and Nefarians and like Thought Steals and Brewmasters and Operatives, you know, had dragons in it too to get the max Historian Operative, just anything that like gives you cards, right? The definition of greed. That deck was climbing the ladder, believe it or not, which was pretty amazing. Like, it was shocking to me because, you know, I was just playing it knowing that I was probably going to lose against anything aggro related or, you know, maybe even some, you know, Jay Druid, which Jay Druid does beat that deck. But surprisingly, it did okay against aggro shaman and jade shamans and even decently against Pirate Warrior if you removed like maybe one greed card and put in like a heal, you know, like a greater healing or something like that. Something to buy a turn or two. And so that was super fun, like crazy fun. I had times where I was just like, I mean, many times where I'm like, I gotta just throw cards out because I can't even draw. I mean, I don't have any room to draw cards here because I can Bran and Historian and Kazakus and then Youthful Brewmaster, one of those, and then I'm stealing brands from him, and it's just like,
you probably won by just forcing people to rage quit. It sounds like the type of deck where I'd be like, awesome, this is taking too long, I can play three more games
it
takes to beat you up,
that
so I'm just gonna quit out and get back on the ladder before this guy starts again.
but here's the thing, though, right? You start the game and you play like 2 or 3 minutes of it and five, and then you're like, okay, maybe we can finish this in one more. And then you stick around, and by the end, you spend 15 minutes in that game hoping that it would end earlier than it did. That's the problem with Priest. It's like, you get into it, this could finish in 5 minutes. This could. And then like 15 minutes later, you're like, holy shit, what have I done? And then you lose because attrition, and you've basically lost the game at that point.
Well, you know, what's the best? You know what's the best?
I wonder what you did with your life.
It's crazy. Exactly, right? What's great is when you end up playing another priest, another Reno priest, and they're like, I'm going to outvalue you. And you're just laughing. You're like,
man,
dude, I've got another 3 or 4 value cards that you don't have, man. I promise you don't. And you end up just wrecking other priests. Yeah. And I've beaten Reno Mage 100% with that deck. Like, not, I haven't lost a single time to Reno Priest with that deck. So it's actually really fun. If you guys want to check it out, you know, watch the episode or check out the show notes from last week. And I replaced Paletris because Paletris wasn't a good enough value. I replaced him with Nefarian, and it's been working out pretty well.
It's not very good, but on the flip side, it's an awesome card.
It's an awesome card when you're talking about
greed.
It's one
of the coolest cards for Priest. Yeah.
Okay, so anyways, you have a Reno Priest you wanted to talk about this week.
Well, actually, it's just a preface. This is not a deck you want to play with to climb the ladder ever, period. It's just a really fun fucking deck. So Randuin Rin is a deck, for those of you who are not familiar with the concept, that I created in the alpha that I eventually transitioned to the beta, which was all about random cards that had cool effects, with Anduin Rin being kind of the core. So random plus Anduin does Randuin. So that was the idea behind the deck. And unfortunately, the deck doesn't function anymore. You know, playing Milhouse, Menestorm, Lorewalker, Cho, and all the random effects like Nat Pagel on top of that just is not going to yield you any functional victories. However, as it turns out, the Cabal faction is filled with random bullshit you can do, and Priest is still able to play Thoughtsteal and Mind Vision. And it can sprinkle in some, you know, Museum Curator, Cabal Courier, Cabal Chemist, Nexus Champion Sarad, which works very well with Raza the Chain. The same thing with Confessor Paltris, also working with Raza the Chain. Slap in a Shifting Shade into that deck, a Kazakus to brew potions, a Tink, an extra hex. And you've got yourself a really fucking awesome Reno Priest to play. It's not the best Reno Priest. It doesn't have a crazy, you know, value play against, you know, if you're needing value. But it plays Yogg at the top end because that card still works when it does. It's just a beautiful...
Exactly.
I am so glad, Nox, that it is impossible for me to run into you on the ladder. Like, I am very, very happy about it. Because I was playing against this and I even looked like I was going to lose, like, I'm not an angry person, okay? But I would maybe get a little bit upset.
But the thing is, like, it's not that bad. Because, like, let's say you take, like, Reno Dragon Priest, right? Let's take Reno Dragon Priest, right? We're going to take that deck. And you just sub out, like, Twilight Drake for Shifting Shade. You sub out, you know, the Bookworm for Cabal Shadow
Priest. So you take all the good cards out and put in bad ones, yeah?
But I don't know, man. Like, Bookworm, Cabal Shadow Priest, Azura Drake, Nexus Champion, Sarad. Like, the deck is still... Like, it's still curving out in a very similar fashion. It's just playing other stuff in there that's more, you know, discovery-oriented. Like, Discover. No Twilight Whelp, you know, no Wormist Agent, and instead Forbidden Shaping Mind Vision. So it's just, like, a different, more spell-based approach. It's just more fun, but I don't know.
I'll tell you one thing. If you can get the right potion from Kazakus, you can make almost anything happen with Reno Priest.
Man.
Seriously.
This is like...
You can make...
You don't need it. This deck just does Reno things baseline. It's just disgusting.
Do you not run Soul Priest?
Sorry?
No.
Do you run Soul Priest? No.
The Akanai? No, I don't.
So you're doing this, but you don't want the chance at just one turn killing someone with the infinite combo.
I tried to, like, the thing I'd sub out is, like, Tinkmaster Overspark, right? Like, it's, like, the one thing that I would sub out.
Okay.
The issue is, like, if I play Soul Priest, I want Wild Pyro, which is great in these types of decks, and then I want to play Circle, and then everything just goes to crap because it's no longer, you know, consistent deck. So... I've been very happy with the results, by the way. Like, the win rate of this deck, starting from rank 16, I streaked to, like, rank 13. So just to put it into perspective, it's like a deck that in the teen range will win. It's just once you hit, like, the Pirate Warrior pack.
I just looked the way you were like, yeah, I didn't want to put in these cards because it would make the deck inconsistent.
Right, like, it wouldn't make
isn't
the deck
Isn't the point
fun.
Of the deck to be...
No, it's super. It's consistently capable of pulling
it's
off
consistently
shit.
Consistently inconsistent. Yeah. Okay,
it's
I get it.
Consistently able to do, like, the most random shit, and that's what I play it for. So if the deck wasn't designed to live until it could do stupid shit, it wouldn't even be fun, which is why I had to stray away from just Randuin with, like, double Mind Vision, double Mind Games, double Thoughtseal, because that was fun back when, you know, Control Warrior didn't even run any threats, and now it's like I can't play Mind Games. Like, it's just gonna bring out a garbage 1/1 and I'm dead on board. Like, you can't even play Thoughtsteal on curve 99% of the time nowadays. Like, it's just never happening. So it's just trying to win against the aggro stuff while maintaining a really fun factor against the slower deck. So,
well, that's what I mean. Like, so, like, when you first glance at this thing, you're like, okay, if you miss Doomsayer in the beginning, unlike the dragon stuff, which has taunts that can actually absorb it, you don't have it. And, you know, I've gone through, you know, some of my bad draws, like, early on, or when I don't hit taunts and stuff. And for me, as long as I hit Kazakus and have an additional scenario to board remove at five, and well, just reset them, everything, yeah. You know, like then that's what I mean. So it can fix so many things. Kazakus just fixes so many things for these type of priest decks, and yeah. That's
Potion
it makes
of
it,
madness.
Yeah, it makes it work.
Yeah. I actually think as well, obviously depending on what the new cards look like from the new set, I think Priest might edge itself out as the stronger Highlander deck.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think they've already said that.
In the long run, yeah.
Yeah, I think they've already said that they want it to be. That's why they have Raza, right? And
yeah, I mean, Raza's insane. And just Greater Healing Potion is sick.
It's like, disgusting. It's so Reno can leave and you have the Greater Healing, you're still okay. Yeah,
that's true.
It's insane.
Yeah, so yeah, definitely a fun deck to play. Every game is different. That's the beauty of these type of decks where you're drawing like a ton, and this one's even more random than mine. Like there's all kinds of different cards coming. But every card game is different. It's awesome. Yeah. It's like it's great. Okay, so we did actually had a I think it was an email. No, it was a comment on the YouTube VOD last week where we were talking about hand buffing pallies, you know, or grimy goons type of paladins. And, you know, you mentioned, oh yeah, you know, you can get the legendary grimy goons decks or whatever, or just hand buffing paladins. So they're like, yeah, it'd be cool to see which ones that Noxious, you know, was talking about. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'll just ask him to see which ones they were. So you brought three of them today. So let's take a look at them. And and prefacing this, I tried for like a day or two, tried really hard to build a good mid-range one. Not one that was like, you know, super crazy aggro, and yes, everybody's done that. But I tried to make one that was like legitimately, you know, mid-range and just solid, you know, with doppelganger and everything like that. I lost so many games, dude. I mean, like, it was insane how many games I lost. So I just finally just gave up, yeah. So, okay, so this is the first one we're looking at. Mid-range hand buff. What is this?
All right, so this is the default version that I would run if I were trying to build a vanilla hand buff. That is exactly what it would look like. So it's running, you know, double Smuggler's Run, double Grime Street Outfitter, and double Grime Street Enforcer on 5 mana as hand buffs. You don't want to run anything else. There's really no point to it. These are all the Paladin ones. You don't want to be putting the, what's the name of it? The 3-cost neutral guy that does the same thing. Like, you just don't need a 3-mana 2/4 that buffs one minion. Mass buff, right, with this. And the goal, like, the biggest weakness of Paladin in the metagame is the aggro deck that exists. And it just literally runs all over you, and there's nothing you can do. That has been the biggest issue of Paladin in many cases. And the deck addresses that. It's running double Worgen Infiltrator, double Argent Lance, double Flame Juggler, which at first seems like a shitty idea until you actually do it, because you realize that if you even land like a single buff on a 3 or 4 drop, those aggro decks just shit their pants in many cases. And suddenly you get like a really power, like you get a 5/6 second rate bruiser, a 4/6 Senjin Shieldmaster, a 3/3 weaker flame burn bristle. That's one buff. And because the deck needs to capitalize on those buffs when it's trying to be proactive, as it is a mid-range deck, it sometimes needs to be proactive. It's also running all the Divine Shield minions that have charge. Double Argent Commander, Double Argent Horse Rider. Most brain-dead deck to build, if you actually know what the hand buff mechanic is meant to do in Paladin. Once you figure out what the mechanic was built for, this deck kind of builds itself. And that's why I was so surprised to see so many people struggle with the idea, because the biggest trap card for a mid-range hand buff deck is Doppelgangster. Like, that's what I realized on day one. I tried to build, you know, Blubber Baron Doppelgangster, and I realized mid-range, like, hand buff Pally cannot make that card work. A control version could probably run it as, like, a one-of, as a single-handed win condition when you flood the board with one big-ass Doppelgangster that just wins after, like, a board clear was established. But in a mid-range deck, that's, like, competing with, you know, a good 5-drop, like, the Enforcer on 5 mana. So you'd still have to play it very, very late in the game, in which case running 2 copies of it, not relevant. Very often you manage to buff one, and the second one comes off the top, and you have no more hand buff, so it's still a 2-2. Useless. So the second copy I tend to just throw out. And the weirdest card in the deck was the Ancient of Blossoms for me. The 6 mana 3/8 taunt, which used to be a Sunwalker, right? And what I realized is oftentimes Sunwalker's shield gets popped for 1 damage. So it's really just a 4/6. So what the fuck do I need a 4/6 for when I can make a 3/8 instead? There's literally never been a scenario where that was relevant to me. The only case was against the priest when they could Shadow Word Pain or Bookworm the 3/8. Yeah. But oftentimes I found that Sunwalker, if I buffed it once, became a 5/6 and then died to Shadow Word Death, or the 3/8 became a 4/8. 4/9 that didn't die to anything. So like all these realizations, when you put them together, just make sense against the meta. So is this deck really, really good? Probably not, you know, enough to be considered tier one, but I wouldn't put it, you know, below tier three or two, like maybe three. I feel like most underrated archetype of the expansion is the hand Buffadin, by far. Like, it's ridiculously underrated.
Did you test the Paladin 1/2s? The one drop? Yeah, if it's buffed, it draws. Was that not any good?
It was good when I tried to play an aggressive version of hand buff.
Oh, okay. I've only ever tried it in the aggro list, that's all.
Right.
Yeah.
In aggro, it's really good.
Just because cycle's good in this deck, right? Because you don't want to buff when you've got no cards. Like, that's one of the biggest problems, right? It's the problem Hunter has. Like, this. But give it a buff card, you know, hand buff cards. Oh, wait, they never have any cards. So, you know.
Yeah, Yakalata is amazing in Pally for that. So
The biggest, it's funny that you had that same revelation with Ancient Blossoms, because I had the same revelations with that whenever I was trying it. But the issue I have with Paladin building this type of deck is that, you know, this type of deck is the one that when you fall behind, you just lose. You know, like you can't catch, like shamans have so much power that even if you get like a turn four, turn five, and a turn six type of taunt, they still get through you, which is kind of crazy. So,
well, trying to beat shaman right now is a fucking waste of your time. Like, just don't take it. Like, so here's the thing, right?
But that's
we're taking a tier three or four class or an archetype that's not tier one, right? And then we're trying to make it the best we can. And the best we can may not be the best deck. Like, we can't make, you know, it's like you can't make a crazy Reno Priest the best deck in the meta if it's not like a dragon-oriented one. So you just take the deck to the maximum potential you can, and that's the end of it. And that's what I think a list like a mid-range deck would look like if I had to build it.
Yeah, I agree with that, but it's just, for me, a tier 3 deck would have to be, you know, like something that you can climb with. And
oh, you can climb to Legend with this. Eyes closed. No fucking problem.
I'm willing to bet my soul
on it.
My question is, like, to me, a deck like this needs to be very sort of aimed at a certain archetype. What decks does this beat quite easily? Like, what have you had the most success with? So, like you said, there's no point trying to beat out Shaman at the moment because it's insane. But like, what
I actually beat Shaman with
it does well against Rogue,
like Argent Lance. Yeah, well, yes, it does against Rogue because of the amount of chargers you get, but it's actually not bad against Shaman. Like, they just panic when you drop a 4/6 Sengen. It's a lot of damage wasted. Like, second rate Bruiser and Sengen against Shaman when they hit one buff is retarded. It's ridiculous. And then you get Ardent Commander, snipe off totems, Horse Rider kills totems for free. Like, these cards are completely busted.
Oh, I
don't know, man.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean by that, but it is one of those decks where, you know, there is no Borclear. So if for whatever reason you don't even start out off with your curve, you generally don't come back from it. Like, especially with Shaman that has that super quick start ability in the first three turns. So, you know, if you did, let's say you just drew your 3, 4, and 5 cards, and you don't get that Lance, and or you don't get that. I don't, even if you don't get an Acolyte of Pain to potentially draw some, right?
We're running like 6 cards that are below 2 mana. They're 2 mana or less, right? 8 if you count the Grime Street Outfitter, which helps you transition into a 3/2 Horse Rider. So really the big deal is oftentimes with the deck you end up just hard mulliganing because you're looking for those cheap drops. If you hit one of them, your win rate just shoots up. Like, it's crazy how big it gets. And it's very tough to push a hand buff streak off a board. Like, it's really tough to push a deck that's able to curve naturally, that plays hand buffs off of their board as soon as they have it. And I think you run enough taunts and value removal. Because the thing is, your removal, something a lot of people bitch about in Paladin, is effectively your Chargers with Divine Shield, your Aldor Peacekeeper, your Chosever Champion. Like, you basically have 6 to 7 pieces of removal. If you include Argent Lances, you have even more. And then you've got the Worgen Infiltrator, which often is just a Holy Smite, if not more in the mid game. I've had this guy be a 6/5 with stealth in the late game where I just felt because I don't need him, and it wins games on its own. It's like, it's one of those things where I feel like people underrate the amount of removal that you can find in just having minions. So I don't know, man. I beat pirate decks all the time, like the Pirate Warrior. Rogue just gets shat on. That's great.
Yeah, Rogue
Dragon
for sure
Priest, I can win because weapons are sick.
The Dragon Priest is kind of interesting. It would be pretty, I think it would be pretty close and competitive. You can get the 4/9 and you can get like your minions to 4 attack, then it can do really, really well against it. Yeah, so exactly. Like, and just stop. That's actually really, really good. When I was playing, I had so much trouble with Shaman. I had so much trouble with Reno decks too, that it was, it was just hard to win. There are a lot of cool dynamics though, like little things that Noxious was talking about that a lot of people, you know, you can't actually theorize about. You actually have to go and play games to actually see it in action, right? And see how these cards actually do incorporate into, you know, a lot of the popular decks, or how it deals with popular decks or is able to get advantages. And I mean, even Tyrion, like there were times where I questioned even putting Tyrion in the deck. Like,
yeah, he was a very fringe card in the deck given the game plan, but it's such an auto win when it lands that it's just hard to justify.
It's a taunt too. The biggest thing is it's a taunt for me. It has Divine Shield. Otherwise, it's kind of like, it's not that typical value Tyrion play because by that time it's like you want it to be your last card. You know, it's like, okay, this is my last card. I'm just slapping it down. I hope I win the game. You know, kind of thing. But generally speaking, you know, you're not gonna. You don't want it early, that's for sure, and you don't care if it gets buffed that much either. It's already good the way it is,
on its own, right? You don't need to make it any better than it is.
Right. And that's like Don Honcho too. It's like if you're not playing Doppelgangster, then Don Honcho is like, you get a +5/+5 on something that it probably isn't going to make the biggest impact unless you're playing, you know, like a Reno Lock or you know, something where you actually need. Like a large amount of damage in 2 turns.
Yeah.
You know, I think the important thing, or at least deck, is the mixture of like taunts and charge minions.
Yeah.
Because the buffs on those minions are worth so much more than a buff on a regular minion.
Yeah,
because,
absolutely.
Well, Don Hancho on a charge minion, okay, I mean, you know, like, and then Don Hancho on a taunt minion, or any buff makes that taunt minion just so much better. I like the build. I don't know if I play it too much, but it looks cool. It looks like one of the better builds I've seen.
Yeah
you have to try it to really get it though, because I've tried to basically, like, you can't even it's funny with that specific archetype, because I've never been able to just theorize a deck that worked. I had to play the deck so much
to find its weaknesses. Yeah, and then you realize how important Argent Lance is. And actually, one card that's very disappointing, I have to say, is Wicker Flame. I don't actually think Wicker Flame, Wicker Flame Burn Bristle, the heal taunt at 3, I don't think he does much for me. Very often he just doesn't do much because the opponent handles him with spells a lot. So that's one card I haven't been too pleased with. Every time I play Paladin, I don't know if you had the same experience or not. In theory, great.
I mean,
it's
this
like,
deck has been,
you know,
doing amazing work, but I could see how you don't like it.
I think he has a very specific role, right? Like, he does certain things very, very well. Like, you want to drop that guy on 3 against a pirate deck, right? Like,
yeah,
you always want it. But then against anything more control-y, it's kind of just a 3-mana 2/2 to a certain extent. Any Reno deck is probably just like, okay, I'll just kill it. I don't really care.
I mean, even if you do get him like in a pirate warrior, yeah, it's great. You're going to heal twice. But he doesn't really impact the board enough that, you know, that card doesn't save you.
No,
if you
it's
don't have
really
any more
good
heals.
Against. No, it's really, really sick against Pirate Warrior, right? Like, mitigating damage and healing at the same time. Because oftentimes when it comes down, you've already taken 6.
I don't disagree with that.
So it's basically a 3-mana heal 6, which, like, is, I find, pretty reasonable just in general.
It can set the trades can set up for the kill trades as well. The turn after. So when something like goes into it, you can actually, it makes things like Frothing Berserker just easier to deal with because they're not at 4 health anymore. They're at 2. It can help on that. But looks good.
It was just through my experience, at least. In theory, I think it's great. It's just, it rarely saves me. But that's one of the things I felt like I had to do was add a little bit of heal to it, to this deck. A tiny bit, just to last.
I don't know where
enough.
You'd find the room.
Yeah,
though.
I don't either.
Like,
that's why it was
tried,
tough.
I've really tried that's to like cut tough. One Argent Lens, find some form of healing, and frankly, it's just been... You know, you better just draw and try to create one counter swing. Because, like, I've had many turns where, you know, the game kind of, I just barely make it against aggro, and other, like, against the other mid-range decks is just, all right, here's me controlling their board a little bit early game, trying to set up buffs. There's many, many cases where I basically a hero power over Grime Street Outfitter, like on turn two, almost every game, because it makes no sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Right? To play the Outfitter. So I end up playing it on turn five because I know they have to, you know, worry about what's coming next. And I just go, Aldor Senjin on seven. One of them's a 6/6. The other is like a crazy, you know, taunt. And they're just looking at this like, whoa, what just happened for seven mana? Yeah. It's like, you remember the days of Emperor just killing you in Patron, where you couldn't account for the exact bullshit they were going to pull out? The hand buff creates that, where they know the mana cost, you just don't know what it's going to do. Like, they have no understanding of where it's going to lead. So
I hear you. All right. Anyway. I hear you. All right. Anyway. Well, yeah, I'm going to definitely give it a try, probably later, and check it out. You definitely have some nuances that I didn't try. I mean, I was trying with Doppelgangster, too, and that was... Sure. That was like a way to try to catch up a lot of times on the board, but in the end, it was, you know, it's not very consistent, right? It affects your plays too, because Doppelgangster by himself not getting buffed is not worth it. So you end up having to keep him at times, and you know, like, so that you can Grime Street Outfitter or Smuggler's Run or anything.
The problem is as well is that it's just stats, right? Like, they're just minions with stats, right, as opposed to the minions here. Like, I really like the, you know, charge, divine shield, taunt. Because they do, so the buffs do, like, so are more valuable than like dropping Doppelganger. Yeah, if it's like 3/6/6s, like, awesome. But that's like, you play it and then your opponent's got a whole nother turn in which they're probably already ahead anyway. And then you might sort of slip behind a little bit. Or at least, well, that's been my experience with that card.
You only catch up if they can't remove it in a decent fashion.
Yeah.
If they can remove it in a decent fashion, you're still in the same spot. Yeah. It's a lot to have that be the combo for your deck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That sort of thing. Okay, well, let's see. We're kind of running out of time, so just to get through some more.
We can play. You can show both if you want for the next. I'll just go through them very quickly.
We got Control Paladin, and we got Anything. And Anything, you got the Infiltrators in there again. You got some Outfitters again, and it's kind of interesting.
The Anything is essentially the same as the shell that I showed you, except you take out a lot of the quote-unquote consistent stuff, you know, the flame, the Argent Lance and the Flame Juggler, and you sub that out for War Leaders and Bluegills, and then you add the one Finja instead of a second Grime Street Outfitter that gives you the Murloc package, and then you cut out Don Honcho for when Anything can happen, and I forget what the other cut was that I made to make room for the second Anything, but basically, this beats Reno decks extremely consistently, just because... you just need one Anything to work, and you always put pressure because of hand buffs throughout the game naturally, and I found that to be super cool, just as a game.
Yeah, player. I can see that. That's for sure.
Gameplay twist.
Pretty interesting. It's just definitely a lack of card draw in your typical Anything, but you know, you're hoping to basically be pressuring and dealing essentially with other minions with your minions, right? So
it's like a mid-range Anything versus combo Anything to a certain extent, right?
Yeah,
that's exactly it is a mid-range.
I like that conceptually.
There's no healing, right? So you pretty much just rely on being at least even, and then you just go insane with the Murlocs.
Against Reno, it works pretty well because their game plan is control-based and your game plan is the kind of opposite, where you just play stuff on curve. And the control hand buff is the one where you play one Doppelgangster. And what I like the most about this one, I actually saw Colento play a very similar list, if not identical, because I came up with the idea of using Doppelgangster as a win condition and the idea of, you know, one big Leeroy with Faceless. You know, that was one of the big things in hand buff early on. Where basically the deck revolves around the same stuff the mid-range does, except it's also playing an OTK. The top end, and it's just running what you'd expect out of a control paladin overall, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, I mean, historically, if you're talking about archetype and you know, models, I mean, this is the type of archetype that's worked in the past, you know, like,
right,
let's just say Druid, right? Combo Druid was basically something like this, except for it was much more refined with probably a little bit more removal, or at least spell removal and a bit of card draw. But that's essentially what it was, right? It's better, probably a better version of this type of thing. This generally is the recipe for a great deck.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. That's definitely interesting. And the other one you have is a hand buff Controladin, which...
Yeah, that's the one.
So with the Faceless and the Leeroy as possible finishers too. And if you get Don Honcho on it, right, it's just like... So yeah. Hopefully some of you guys can try it. They're watching the show or listening to the show. Definitely check them out on the show notes. And then lastly, Raven has a shaman, I believe you wanted to talk about. Just a very, actually a super popular shaman right now. And it's,
It's so good. Oh my God.
Yeah. And it's, go ahead and describe it.
Yeah. So this list is extremely close to the list G2 and JJ, which now sounds like a band. which they, you know, they've been playing, and the core of the list that I was playing a few days ago was pretty much that build exactly, right? This is not my build. I want to throw that out there, right? No credit to me or credit to those guys.
Right.
And so what this build had beforehand, and I made a slight change to it, was it had minus one devolve and plus one Jinyu for a second light heal. But the deck is nuts. Somehow, pirates and jades go in the same deck in terms of like more jades, not just, well, I play Jade Claws and Lightning because it's aggro. It's actually just the Jade cards. And I'm pretty quickly sure that Jade Shaman is just way better than Jade Druid in every single way. I actually, believe it or not, the other day, took a Jade Druid and beat him in Fatigue. That is how stupid the deck is. Like, it's crazy. It doesn't make sense.
You won the Jade race, right?
Yeah, and he actually messed up by, he didn't think it would go to Fatigue, so he didn't cycle his second idol.
To be fair,
you don't cycle your second idol in a lot of matchups.
Yeah,
but in terms of the deck, you have the aggro openings, which are kind of silly because your opponents, one, think you're aggro and overcommit into slowing you down, and then you're like, okay, let's slow the game down, you know, build jades and win. And also you have the tools to be aggro. Jade Claws is fantastic. You know, you have enough spell damage cards plus the totem, of course, for the Maelstrom portals to do some work. And I took the devolve mainly to screw over rogues because I was feeling that the second you don't draw hex, you just lose against a rogue. Like, that's literally just how the game goes because you cannot keep up.
Sure.
And also against other shaman, oh my God.
Yeah, it's great.
You just evolve them into wisps.
Yeah.
Like, because there's so many two drops, and even three drops, you take to two drops. Great. And the board is just, you can just deal with it. And then also, a lot of the time, if there's a taunt wall, you devolve it. And almost all the time, it's like silence taunt to a large extent. So it's got a lot of uses and can just win you games, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And then everything else is straightforward. I believe Life Coach and JJ have took out Bran. I cannot understand why. They're playing at like top 20 legend at the moment, I think they were last time. So, you know, and those guys know what they're doing. Maybe it's meta call that they don't feel like they need to get that late into the game because they're facing a lot of aggro or, you know, something like that, maybe. But Bran is nuts because there's the usual Jade Spirit, you know, obviously the big combo, turn 10 combo of the seven drop, that the name, is it Warbringer?
Chieftain,
The Jade Chieftain's insane with Bran, of course. You create two taunts plus the 5/5 itself, but also just turn 5, Bran into Jade Claws, because Jade Claws is a battle cry.
It's crazy.
Almost
every one of the Jade Claws is a battle cry. So
it's insane. You equip a weapon, create two jades, play Bran, and can hit with the weapon. It's absolutely insane, and it demolishes aggro shaman 100%. If you're struggling with shaman, play this bad boy, you will demolish everyone. I've been, the last day and a half roughly, I've been teetering around 400 and 800 legend, so it's definitely, you know, and obviously like JJ playing it, so it can battle at the top ranks as well. So it's just super consistent. It's a lot of fun to play. You can beat aggro. You can take Reno decks to the late game. The only Reno deck I struggle with is Warlock because they're AoE.
Twisting Nether. They have Twisting Nether
Twisting, and very easily, because you don't normally go to like 10, 10, 11, 11, 12, 12, right, with your jades. Bran has to live and stupid things happen. You normally get to like eights in terms of jade size, so they can even pull off a big Shadow Flame and you're screwed, basically. But any other deck is performing extremely well, apart from really Reno Lock is hard. And Rogue can be hard if you whiff.
If you whiff on the...
But guess what? Rogue's fucking hard versus anything if you whiff. You know, like, Rogue can beat you if they're doing
Rogue does
stuff,
degenerate right? things, right?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Well, if they conceal, then yeah. I mean, it's just like...
Yeah,
well, Devolve exactly. helps. Devolve is
yeah.
good for
yeah.
that.
Yeah, Devolve is the only thing that can answer, you know, something like that in terms of showing.
If they conceal and you need to have Devolve or Hex ready for the next turn and you don't die, yeah, you lose. But other than that, a lot of the times I found that you play the Pirates versus Rogue, they do the early Pirates or removal, and then they drop Tomb Pillager, you Hex, and then suddenly they're like, oh,
wait, what? Yeah.
Ooh. And then you have Jade Lightnings that line up so well with the minions of Rogue. So you can do it. It's not like you just lose, but if they do crazy stuff, then sure.
Yeah.
You can lose.
I mean,
but in general,
the winning a lot of times the winning play is the Van Cleef questing play, right?
Exactly.
And
conceal, yeah, exactly.
So you can actually answer that play. You pretty much won. You won the game at that point.
Yeah. But overall, really good deck. Really good deck. Yeah. You can burst people down because of the aggro start you can have, or you can take the game long. And most of the time, you actually end up doing both, and it's just a lot of fun. So I highly recommend to at least give this one a try.
Yeah, I was going to say, because one of the things the deck doesn't do is consistently be the aggressor. So you know how to play mid, you need to know how to play mid-range Shaman, and you need to know how to play aggro Shaman, because frankly, the odds that you get an opening hand that is on the slower end with, you know, let's picture a hand texture that looks like Flame Tongue, Jade Spirit, Thing from Below, and Ginyu Water Speaker. Like, it doesn't matter. And we're talking post-mulligan, it's still very likely. Like, picking up a one drop that's a pirate here isn't as, you know, guaranteed as you might think. So you need to know how to play your very slow matchups as Shaman. If you don't, you're going to be in a world of hurt playing this deck.
Well, yeah, it took me a while to get used to. But believe it or not, the way you mulligan, because your mulligans are really clear, right? You aren't keeping chieftains. You aren't keeping things from below. You aren't keeping Aya unless you're against, you know, you're against like Reno Mage maybe.
Sure.
But even then, like you aren't keeping like half of your deck. So the fact that your mulligans are always super heavy and pretty much all in every time, it doesn't mean necessarily lose if you miss the early drops because you have a lot of stat back mechanics. But your mulligan is like very straightforward. All I would say is versus Shaman, because I presume it's always aggro, even though this deck's been popping up quite a lot on ladder, I always keep Hex just to lock out the 7-7. Because otherwise, you mean
or the 8-8 or the there's a lot of turn 3 and turn 4 killer cards.
Sure, and then versus Rogue, I keep Hex unless my hand is horrendous. Otherwise, other than that, like you just mulligan for your fucking pirates and hit them in the face, basically.
Yeah. I actually don't think it's that hard to play this deck at a baseline. I mean, it is to play it up to like top 20 legend and
right.
top 100.
What I'm saying is you need to know both matchups.
Yeah, you do have to have an understanding.
Yeah. You need to understand how to play mid-range and how to play aggro, because one of the things aggro does is just vomit on the board. It just kind of spews aggression, which isn't as much the case.
What's very important, and like this is the couple of points of advice I'll give anyone playing it.
This is tips of the week, guys. We're combining it here.
Oh, okay. Well, this is for this deck specifically. Because you only run Maelstrom for AoE, you have to really think about when you want to play that
card.
That's
true.
A lot of the time, you do need to combo it with some spell damage. And you hit points in turns where you're like, I could clear some minions, but leave some up. Or I could wait a turn, take a hit, and then clear more minions, right? Turn 7 as your Drake Maelstrom is very common in this deck. And also, you have to be greedy with waiting for Bran versus the control decks. You need a very convincing Bran turn to like cement the win. If you just sort of throw things out and hope, you're probably going to get beat by a lot of the control decks, actually. But you can sit and wait because your hero power is so good versus control. You can just hero power pass. There's no rush, but you just need to get that big Bran off. And then you're in a really good spot. But those two main things, everything else is straightforward.
You know, one thing I would say is that I think that, I mean, the only card that I would say that might be a consideration is possibly Bloodlust, having a Bloodlust.
I've actually cut in that list. I've actually cut a Jade Spirit for a Lust.
Yeah, me too. So I've played a lot like of this. I mean, I was telling Noxious before the show, it's just like, it's so funny how all these decks that we talked about literally in the first week of this expansion is like on the show are starting to come back, and people are, you know, I guess the meta is just kind of going in a circle. I don't know what it is. But
so here's what it is. I can tell you exactly what it is. People go to extremes first.
Yeah.
They make an extremely aggressive deck, an extremely controlled deck, an extremely mid-range deck with a perfect curve, and they never hybridize until much later. And then that's when these decks come up, which are a perfect mix of everything. And it's not really mid-range, and it's not really...
We saw it with Hunter, right? The hybrid Hunter that had aggro, and then high mains and Shredder, and that was
it. Exactly. So, I mean, this deck, we've played... I know me and Ox at least have played varieties of just straight, you know, Pirate Shaman... played Evolve, like with Pirate Shaman, and just literally the minimal Evolve cards to add to it. And for me, with the Bloodlust, all like with the Jade cards, there's no question that you know, you can stick around on the board. Like, there's at one point, once they start getting to be 4/4s and 5/5s, and that point, they're sticking to the board. And usually at that moment is where it's the most crucial state of the game. Like, either you're going to continue to go on and snowball and win, or you're going to have that really crucial board remove and you're done, right? And sometimes you have this kind of race too, or where you're just like, you're equal and you're both mid-range and you're trying to figure, you know, who's going to win. And then that Bloodlust just wins you games sometimes.
So, yeah, I have a fear of Bloodlust in decks, because I feel like I'm the guy who draws it turn one every game. and then I genuinely feel some games are very tight because you only have two Maelstroms. And I feel like the second you draw a Bloodlust when you don't want it, when you're behind, you can be in some trouble. But a lot of people have said to me to try Bloodlust. And a funny story as well, because you mentioned Evolve. When I was playing the deck without Devolve, and then I was like, you know what? There's a list going around that has like Ellie Destruction, Devolve, you know, like it goes crazy on the Jade style, like the control style.
Yeah, I played that. And I played against that.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, you know what? Devolve does some work, especially in the mirror. It does a great amount of work. I'm going to try Devolve. So I was like, I put Jin Yu out, because in control matchups, it's a 3/6 or 4 that does nothing.
Yeah.
So I took one out. I you know, put the card in my deck, played the game, and was like, okay, cool, seems good. I drew it early, and I was like, okay, great. Played it. I was like, oh, shit. I put Evolve in the deck, not Devolve. I was like, it was one mana, sick. But the best thing was, I played it on a turn where I had, like, a 3/4/5 Jade on the board, and I was like,
this is
like,
working.
Yeah, maybe Evolve is a card. Like,
actually, Evolve, damn, I mean, you know, even in this, you know, even just like talking about Jade and Evolve, because I think I played the version with Jade Chieftain. Noxious, I think you played the version without Chieftain, right? But even
I tried both, yeah.
Did you try? Yeah, with Chieftain, it's nice because you get an 8. You get an 8 drop with it.
Yep.
You know, and the 8 drop is the best place, you know, for the Evolve. So that was actually nice. So when you're playing Evolve, you have the Doppelgangsters and you have Jade Chieftains as target. Not as great with the Jade Chieftains, obviously, but it's still really, really cool. And then when you add just the Bloodlust, as long as something's sticky, you're good. And as long as you have
like 3 minions to win with Bloodlust, it's ridiculous.
And then when you're playing against control, when you're playing against Reno Lock, you're playing against like Reno Mage or Reno Priest or whatever, you don't feel bad totemming. You don't feel bad at all.
No, you definitely want
to waste their board removal. So
there are times where I've had like 2 drops and stuff, and I'm just like, nope, just gonna press totem.
Then they have to decide.
You just wait.
Like,
yeah,
and then it's just like, okay, you don't remove my 6 or 7 small minions, I just killed you.
Yeah, because there's a card in this deck that is actually, I think, if we take Buccaneer out of the game, is one of my maybe number 2 card to be nerfed that I want nerfed is Flame Tongue Totem.
Flame Tongue is fucking
absolutely
retarded.
Ridiculous. Yeah. And if you just totem up and have 3 totems on the board, Flame Tongue is insane. So they have to be afraid of Flame Tongue. But that card needs 2 health.
It's a mini Bloodlust, dude.
That card
it should be 0/2.
Really?
Yeah, it should be 100%. Okay.
It is good.
On 2 or 3 with like a minion or 2 down in aggro, mid range, Jade, whatever Shaman deck. Right. That Flame Tongue is either immortal, it just cannot be killed by anything because it's got 3 health at like turn 2 in the game, or you kill the Flame Tongue and the other minions kick the crap out of you that you've left alive. Like, it is so strong. It's crazy.
So I'll say one thing, too, that's fascinating to me about the deck is that post-rotation, this deck is very much a thing. You know,
sure.
I used to say, The deck, you know, I would say I said Shaman would die, but I said Shaman is going to struggle once the rotation hits because it's losing Trog and Totem Golem. As it turns out, the Jade package and the Pirate package together creates a nuts. New Shaman. Yeah. It's literally replacing card for card what they lost. They lose Thunderbluff Valiant, giving them Jade. They lose Tunnel Trog Totem Golem package, give them the pirate package. So suddenly all these things like swap out their class cards that are supposed to give them a mid-range playstyle and swap them out with new cards that give them a mid-range playstyle. So you're never really rid of them. And the mid-range Shaman just stays strong because Flame Tongue's a thing and the Hex is a thing. The only thing this deck is losing is like Brand Bronze Beard, I think. That's it.
Yeah.
Like
Brand's kind of a big deal though. I mean, I'm surprised they dropped it. Wow, that's because getting
it's
past that
and, but it
it's
helps,
getting yeah. past that initial 1-1 and 2-2 is really important, like to get through that fairly quickly so that whenever you do make the Aya play or whenever you do make your first Jade Chieftain play, it's a significant play, not just an undervalued play.
I think the idea is as well, if you if you're not facing a lot of late control games, mm-hmm. you have Jade Claws, you have two Spirits, you have two Jade Lightnings, which you're almost always playing on four, almost. True. So, like, by the time you get to Aya, and Aya double buffs Jades, you know, your Aya and your Chieftains are probably, like, at least 4-4, 5-5, and then anything after that is actually huge. So, I'm still playing Bran, obviously. Like, I think Bran's absolutely amazing, but, you know, I'm guessing that's the idea, is they're just not facing too many decks that warrant Bran, because Bran actually just isn't that good to play on three anymore. That there were so many things.
Oh, you never played on three. In this deck, you can't play it on three because you need the guarantee to double battle.
Card. Yeah, which is why I feel if you're facing a lot of more aggressive decks, like Bran versus Rogue, I'd rather just
not that
Rogue.
Great.
Like, so I think that's the idea, and I think they actually play double book and double deck hand, I think.
Okay, I've seen double Spirit Claws.
Spirit Claws over deck. Wow, okay. That's
no, I don't know. It's tough to
I mean, it's nice to get a better another pirate. It's good to get another pirate. And then you're probably trading it into a Buccaneer anyways or something. Yeah. Maybe.
And it's just good with Flame Tongue Totem. It's four damage, one mana go.
Yeah, it's all the little intricacies that are make a big difference at the top.
It's disgusting, actually, because oftentimes they have like two totems on the board, drop Flame Tongue, and then I'll just attack with the two totems and then drop the South Sea right between, you know, one totem and the Flame Tongue. It's like, here's four free damage I just push while I have a weapon.
The best thing is when you have like two totems and then you haven't drawn a pirate. This has happened more often than life with me.
Patches.
You drop Flame Tongue, you trade totems, and then you drop the Buccaneer, it pulls patches, or you drop Deckhand and it pulls patches, and you just double attack
six.
Again. It's like an extra, it's like so much extra damage. It's, oh my god.
Yeah, it's
Flame Tongue's OP, guys. Flame Tongue's OP.
Flame Tongue's good. I mean,
it's
totems
good.
Really
it's
work as well unless you
good.
Trade, but it's one of those really crazy decks that just does. It's actually the type of card that I love in terms of what it tries to give you. Like, it's very, I wouldn't say skill intensive, but a newbie will fuck up. Like, a new player will fuck that up every single day. The issue is, like, its potency when it's played well is just, like, against Priest, for instance, what do you Shadow Ward Pain? Like, you know the problem that you run into? It's like, okay, so now your small time's a 5-2. I can't death it. It's fucking worthless. I can't death your Totem Golem. And if I pain your Flame Tongue, I still want to pain your Totem Golem and your Small Time right afterwards. Yeah. What's my option?
That's what's really funny is, like, versus Priest, I do the Buccaneer Flame Tongue, and I'm just like, you death it. You death that Buccaneer, friend, because I'm playing Jade Shaman, and I've got some big boys waiting later on. Like, yeah, I'm okay. He spent 3 mana to kill a 1-drop, and I still have Flame Tongue alive.
Yep.
It's insane.
Well, the quandary are the quandary that a lot of probably casual low-level players ask is if there's a Manatide Totem and a Flame Tongue Totem on the board, which
what
one
do
you kill first?
Yeah, it's like...
that's a pretty popular question, actually.
So good.
It's like, I don't want it to draw cards, but if I don't, I'm dead. So
I think that's...
getting tempo, it's like getting... Do I get tempo on the board versus like a distinct tempo versus giving him a card?
That's one space that's a little bit... I'm still thinking about is the double Manatide. The card draw is great.
Yeah, I don't think
like really good, but sometimes it either isn't needed or you need something way better than Mana Tide to like survive, for example. So the double Mana Tide, that might be a spot that opens up at some point to take one out. But
a Storm?
Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. Without Tunnel Trog, Storm feels so much weaker, like when you're trying to consolidate a lead.
The thing about this deck is, like I said earlier, the games can be very tight in terms of
they're always tight.
Surviving.
Yeah, they're always tight.
But I like the fact that it's tight but doable, right? Like, you know, you can actually just about get it done with just two Maelstroms, and guess what? They don't overload you. There's barely any overload in the deck. It's nuts. You always have a full turn. It's crazy. I mean,
that's what you call refined decks, right? The decks that just barely win against the meta. Those are definitely good. Well, anyways, why don't we move on? Spent a lot of time on the decks, and I think we kind of covered tip of the week, and we talked a lot about different things there. So we'll probably skip that this week and come back with maybe a brand new one to actually have a segment. But topic of the week, I guess, really, really quickly. I mean, just I guess not really quickly, but at least somewhat quick. I actually brought up the topic that somebody brought up on Reddit, which was. Is the issue with powerful cards, let's just say Buccaneer right now, is it more of an issue that there's just no counter cards?
I feel like there are counters to... I mean, it's just they're not something you'd put everywhere, unlike the pirate package.
Right, so how about... are there not enough... or are cards powerful because there are not like specific counter cards that are equally powerful? Yes, you could say, you know, so, you know, like you could, cause you could say BGH counters to Rack, right? It counters Rack, but it's not powerful though, right? It's not a card that you feel good playing outside of just literally countering that. Or is it just what we think it is, which is like, yeah, the cards are just too powerful. And I mean, the given the stats and their abilities, for me, I think you could maybe balance it with other powerful cards, but then we're probably talking about creep to some extent.
No, I'll tell you what it's like, right? One of the big issues with counterplay, introducing it at the same time as cards, is you end up in this position where the counterplay is too good, then the cards just doesn't see any fucking play because the other, you know, it's like printing a 2-mana 3/3 acidic swamp ooze, right? Like,
right.
Suddenly, you know, weapons are shit. Or not shit, but like you just play 2-mana 3/3s everywhere because why the fuck not?
Yeah. And then because the card that's meant to be countering is bad and doesn't get played, the counter doesn't get played.
So the acidic swamp is a great card in Hearthstone. Like I like the balance of it because it's just good enough in stats that, you know, it's not a completely dead or complete blank against, you know, non-weapon classes, and against weapons it does the job okay. The issue is, of course, weapons are pretty fucking busted, but you know, that's another topic. Point is, counterplay doesn't need to be included every single time. Like, you don't need to print a good little exorcist with Undertaker necessarily. What you need to do is not print Undertaker.
I think
Buccaneer is a very extreme example because it's one, it's a neutral card, which is why it's everywhere, because then suddenly people want counters in every single deck ever, which is difficult, right? But you know what? Druid can counter Buccaneer, Living Roots. One mana, sort of dealt with outside.
That's what I mean.
Right?
So, I mean, counter card is hard. I mean, you have to really define what a counter card is, because I don't think anybody likes swing cards, right? Like, I think historically, people don't like BGH. People don't like things like the Black Knight. And but at the same time, people do like, maybe are a little bit more accepting of counter cards like, I don't know, like Taunt or like
Mistress of
maybe
Mixtures.
Silence. Yeah, healing upon, you know, like it's a more elegant way of countering something versus, and it's a versatile way too. Like you can actually use these in different ways too. That's a better way to answer cards.
I think the problem as well is in Hearthstone specifically, because I play quite a lot of, there's a million online card games now, so I actually try most of them.
Yeah.
But in Hearthstone, I feel like if the counter becomes good, then it's too good instantly, right? Because the second, I feel in Hearthstone, the second you slip, like you lose, right? That's how I feel like most games go. Like, especially in like, you know, Curbstone matchups. Like if you play Buccaneer and there's suddenly a two drop, that's a 2/2 that destroys a pirate, right? Like, this is extreme.
It's a swing card, yeah.
But then, like, yeah, and then suddenly your opponent's like, oh, do I just lose now? Whereas in other games, there are cards with very powerful effects, and then there are counter cards. But the powerful effect, if it's lost, is not just game-losing most of the time. It's less impactful. Whereas, because in Hearthstone, in terms of countering, we're pretty much talking about minions, right? But if you counter a minion, you normally have to kill it. And then if you kill it and gain something from that, well, that's just too hard a swing most of the time. So I feel like Hearthstone's sort of unique at the moment in that aspect. But in terms of hard counters, like, no one really liked Silence because it's dumb to a large extent.
It's limiting. It's very limiting. Yeah, it's just blanket. It's like a blanket answer.
It makes you cool cards not do cool things. Like, who wants that, right? Like, no one to a certain extent.
To be honest, I don't actually mind that aspect of it. I just mind that there is an ability that literally counters many abilities. Things. It's not even specific, you know? So that's, I think, introducing Silence actually makes cards that only kill dragons or only kill legendary cards.
Like,
or only kill
2-mana 1/2, right? Well, 2-mana 1/2 that reads destroy a 1-mana minion. If you do so, gain +1/+1, right? So it's a 2-mana 1/2 shit against everything, and then it kills small time buccaneer and gets buffed. So it becomes a 2/3 standard, right?
Like, how does
an aggro deck ever win that game?
Or should it be...
Who plays that, right? It's a 1/2. Against control, it's a dead draw completely.
True.
It's not like an ooze.
Or you could do the opposite, Noxious. You could give it the stats and then take the stats away if it destroys a one.
Ah, that's pretty cool.
You know, like a 1-mana.
Sure. Yeah. Like the other way around.
Yeah, that would be more balanced, I think. Yeah. Instead because of like doubling down on the good stuff, basically.
Is it the Defias dude that silences a Death Rattle minion?
A Death Rattle minion,
Like, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah,
you want to beat Sylvanas? Like, boom, done, perfect. Like, I'm behind that. Like, that's cool.
Yeah, but you know what? You know why that card wouldn't work? Is because silence is already
introduced.
There's
silence in the game.
Yeah. So people, even if it's not even good, even if all the silence cards are not good, it's just the fact that they already introduced it, and people have that notion of Ironbeak Owl at 2-mana like a long time ago, and they're like, this is not going to be good. This only does Death Rattle. Like, this is like not good.
So but if they removed normal silence from the game, that's all you got, guys.
Like, exactly. Then it would still even take time for people to.
Yeah,
to acclimate to that.
I do think in Hearthstone, though, because Hearthstone's such an at the moment, at least, I think, like, hard counterplay could actually just break the game in a very unfun way.
And we've seen it. We've seen, like, BGH, and we've seen...
Yeah.
I mean, thankfully, Black Knight has never been crazy, crazy, you know.
It was for a while. I mean,
every once in a while, it pops up and kills the Ancient of War. Yeah.
Well, when Handlock's a thing, right? Like, when Handlock was a thing, Black Knight was... It wasn't unfun. It was just necessary. And it's one of those things where...
But yeah, that kind of swing is...
what the actual problem was.
Insane.
Kind of swing you get from this is...
Yeah. Yeah. But we... You know what? We do see that swing with Kazakus cards. It's, like, crazy swings. Like, 8/8s and then wipe the board. And that's like, wow. Okay, that just won me the game, you know, against a mid-range deck, right? So... that's definitely there. So yeah, I think just generally though, powerful cards, and you know, if we're going to counter powerful cards, counter it just with good cards that do different things. Yeah, clever things, you know. That's
not just like kill this card. Done.
That's right.
So, okay. Yeah.
That's right.
You have a little bit of
work for it.
Yeah, having Nesnuri. One day he will see the light. No.
Didn't you hear about the crazy beast hunter that was, you know? Okay.
Oh yeah.
Paralyzed
druid.
I guess I'm wrong.
One of these days, right? But okay, well, why don't we kind of go into some of the Q&A? But before that, we got some Smilestone, and they want to give some shout outs to a bunch of folks on iTunes. Those of you listening on your iPads, your iPhones, or in your car or whatever, you can actually find us on iTunes and leave a 5-star review and a nice, you know, comment to really help out the show and help people find Value Town as when they search for a Hearthstone podcast. So we got actually a couple people that have done that. Besh69, and no pun intended. Thank you so much for doing that, and hopefully other folks that are listening can also do the same. Also, we want to give a plug out to our patrons, on our Value Town Patreon, which can be found at patreon.com/value. down. The show is 100% funded by you guys. I mean, if you enjoy the show, and you know, want to keep the show going, definitely go and take a look at the page and consider supporting it. But we do have a lot of awesome people that are supporting it right now, and want to give a shout out to some of those guys. So big thanks to our legend producers, Mike T, Lewis G, and Dean P, for being those special guys, that are top contributors, as well as a few others that have been some new patrons, as well as some longtime patrons, David T, Devin W, Tony R, Alex F, Albert, and David G. And we still have met our milestone. So I don't think, Raven, you know what this is? Have you seen the episode?
Here we go.
Boy. Okay.
I'm slightly afraid.
This is for our patrons. All right. So what we do is I'm going to be playing some music here, starting up the music right now. And
is this X-rated?
No, this isn't X-rated.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so.
No, it is not.
I'm going to play some music now. Take your shirt off.
Okay. So, no. All right. So we're going to go 20 seconds of just our most beautiful smile.
20 seconds?
Not saying anything, just a smile.
Okay.
Right. Ready? Here we go. Okay, all right,
That was a long time.
Doesn't it seem like forever whenever that's happening? But yeah, that's anyways, that's for you guys. That's for the patrons, for all the folks supporting Valley Town. And the next milestone, we're actually pretty decently close to that too. That's going to be Laughstone, where we actually laugh for a good solid 30 seconds or give our best laughs so that the audio folks can actually get a chance to enjoy Smilestone.
Please tell me you've got like a Brode laugh button ready.
Dude,
for that.
I'm hoping to get Brode on here one of these days just to maybe introduce Oh my God, that would be amazing.
Wouldn't that be the best?
Holy crap, that would. But anyways, yeah, big shout out to all the patrons. You guys are amazing. And you know, it's actually the subs for some of the channel too that are sub to this channel for Valley. You guys are the reason why we're able to do this show and continue doing it. So thanks so much, guys. All right, so
the milestone is, by the way, you know, for reference, not supposed to be awesome, you know, in a cool way. It's just supposed to be awesome in an awesome way.
The best of all.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. all right, so let's get to some emails here. Some questions or Q&A with emails. We got a question from Moritz K. And what do you guys think of more at the beginning of game effects, kind of like Prince Malcazar? And you get some examples of warrior beginning of the game, get five armor, shaman, summon a random totem. You know, he gives a list of a different examples. Do you guys, or actually, have you guys played Prince Malcazar much? And do you guys like that ability?
Go ahead, Raven. I'll let you speak to it.
Not played Prince Malcazar much. I played against it, and every single time I see it happen, I'm happy because I feel like I'm going to win the game. I think some ideas I've had for a while, something on the lines of anyone who's played World of Warcraft will know about talent specializations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So before you go in, you can be like, tank, warrior.
Then you gain
five armor at the start of the game, and like, you know, hunter instead of the hero power doing just two damage to face, you know, the hero power could just change. That's something I thought about as well, where you can have the specs change the hero power of the class.
Yeah.
It would be very difficult to balance, of course. And I also liked potential effects of like trinkets, where it'll be an equipable card in a different slot than a weapon that has like three uses. You pay like whatever mana, depending on the power, you can do it three times, whatever. In terms of start of game effects, it's cool to alter things, which is what I'm getting at, but my only issue is it makes the card you put in your deck for that to happen bad, which Malcazar is, because it cannot be good, right? The card's dumb, like it's just a dude, like who it's very boring to actually play but good to put in the deck. Whereas I would prefer either have something that does that beforehand, like a talent specialization you can select,
or
the card does something cool as well as doing the start of game effect, maybe to a lesser extent.
Isn't patches kind of a start of game effect? You know, if you want to look at it that in a weird way, it's like, it's a shitty fucking card that you just don't want, but
like saying secrets, man. Like secret paladin, right?
You know what I mean? Like, well, it's like, it's a card that doesn't do anything, yet it's so amazing because it doesn't do anything and it just does itself automatically.
Yeah.
And I feel like that start of game effect, like Prince, is exactly that, right? It's kind of...
Yeah, it's a shame for me that the Malkazar is like a random effect. Like,
right? Yes.
What would be? You know, what would be cool if like you put, for example, say Jiraxxus. Again, like I know you've played a lot of World of Warcraft, Nox. I'm guessing you have as well, Chairman. So like. Jiraxxus is like summoned by the gnome, right? Or whatever.
Wilfred.
Wilfred. So like, what if you had to put like a 4-mana 1/1 in your deck, but it adds like a crazy card in your deck that you know what that card is. It is not a mystery, but to put it in your deck, one, you have to play with 31 cards and you can draw a 4-mana 1/1 that does
kind of like Elise, right?
Yeah. You know what I mean? Where you have like a negative effect for an overly powerful one, but you're playing with 31 cards, which is bad, right? No one wants to play with a deck that's that big, unless you know you're going against a fatigue deck. Maybe something like that would be cool. I just don't like the randomness, because I feel like there's people like random legendaries, but the fact that so many of them are just bad, it is a problem. I would rather have a cool pool of cards that you can get, as opposed to whatever.
I would like a non-random card that breeds, like, you know, enchantments, right? Like the whole permanent auras on the board. I would like if there were a card that read something like, hey, at the beginning of the game, you know, this becomes the fucking battlefield or whatever. And then it's, you know, certain types of cards get buffed. Like Murlocs have +1 attack. Yay, fucking awesome. But when you draw that card, it's just, you know, a waste. It literally just burns itself. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like it burns itself. So it's like a card that is automatically played early game, but when you draw it, it's like a dead card. Like it's a dead draw. Automatically, right. It's kind of like it patches, and I think whenever you make those types of effects in terms of they're going to be played and they do something, it becomes patches, and patches is ridiculous because it does something for nothing, which on average over the course of many games is pretty fucking broken.
And also as well, the weird thing about patches is, however much people hate drawing it, you can still make use of that card when it's drawn, right? It's still one damage for one, you know, and you can do weird things with it with buffs, for example. So like, it's not horrendous, whereas I feel like any strong pre-game effect needs to be countered. You know, as you said, Max, you draw the card and it just burns into nothing. Nah. Like, it's dead. But yeah, it's definitely a cool idea. And I think adding anything to the game which is more intricate or complicated mechanics is the way the game moves forward, in my opinion. I feel like it's what Blizzard have held off on for a few years since the game's new. But I feel now they need to start like saying, okay, we're adding this mechanic. It's not complicated, but intricate, and it adds more depth to the game. Because I feel like, look, it's all about the new player experience, and that's cool. But people have learned to play the game by now. You've got to account for the billions of people who play the game or whatever. Like,
we're still talking about in terms of the confines of, you know, what Hearthstone is right now, yeah. And you know, I'm waiting for the day where they make a radical change. And you know, because if we're talking about this, like, who cares if it's a card? Like, what if it was just like, you know, we do build, like, pick builds, like, right from the start, you know? And
well, I mean, I think like I'm worried that, about so. That because, like, any hero power variation is effectively a new class, is what I've said before. The only thing you could technically do is like add to the current hero power in a slightly different way, as opposed to replacing it. Because if you replace a hero power, even though it's using the same class cards, it's really a different class in terms of in many balance aspects.
Well, you know what? So I thought about that. And when I was discussing earlier about like trinkets, mm-hmm. I saw them as a way to get around that. Because, yeah, for exactly. example, you could play, there could be a warrior trinket that you pay like random numbers, by the way. 2 mana has 3 charges, right? You can only use 1 charge per turn. But once you equip it, you can use it whenever you want, once a turn done. And it gives a minion taunt. So then you can play like a defensive, you know, like, taunty style warrior with other minions.
Yeah, that's
a taunt for free.
Yeah.
But then there's another trinket that could be like 5 mana and it's got 1 charge. But when you equip it, you can use it at any point in the game unless it's destroyed, because there'd have to be a destruction tool in the game. Give a minion Wind Fury. Also, you know what I mean? Like, and there can be aggressive trinket options, defensive or spell options, and not like, I think that would be a nice way to do it, because you could control the power of that effect by its mana cost. You have to equip it, right?
Yeah, so, we talked about that before, a few extra extra card types where like artifacts ish type cards.
Well, they can pull that off right now by just making it a weapon. Like you can have a passive weapon essentially, and then you know possibly have ooze be that way of removing that from that person. But you know your weapon could be your aura, your weapon could be those charges from a trinket, you know, whatever.
Like Medivh.
Yeah, right? Even Medivh with the exactly, Medivh is kind of like that right now. So even in the confines of the game, they can pull it off. It's not you know the most elegant, but it's not too terribly ugly either.
But I just want more card types. I just want more card types than just minions and weapons and spells. Like I just want artifacts and trinkets and even hero power overrides, whatever. Would be nice.
Well, that leads you really well into the next question, which is the TF boy asks, one of the things that has recently bothered me in how it seems like the mobile version of Hearthstone is limiting the game in both design perspective and frequency of updates. One of the more notable examples about design is that in a recent IGN interview, it was said that one of the limitations of why we did not see red mana in the Mean Trees of Gadgetzan set was because it didn't display well on the phone, which I find to be really irritating. Yeah. Then he goes on and lists a few other things. But basically, you know, what do you guys think about mobile client limiting Hearthstone, and how would you try to solve this issue?
So I'll start with saying that the mobile game, the mobile platform of Hearthstone is the reason the game is alive. And that thinking of it in terms of its limiting design is slightly flawed because of the market share represents something of like 90%. I don't fucking know, but it's like in the ridiculous majority played on mobile games. So that's something to take into consideration because I'm a PC player. I don't play Hearthstone on mobile devices. I hate it. I think it looks ugly, but I'm in the minority as it turns out. You know, times have changed and PC is no longer the go-to platform. So thinking of it as a limiting factor is, you know, the same thing as saying, well, don't you wish you could play ball on your PC, you know? But it's a problem because it's a virtual interface and it, you know, the physical space doesn't let you play ball on your PC. It's not the same thing. It's not the same.
But you couldn't be.
You have to adapt to it. So in a weird way, you just need to understand that Hearthstone's primary, you know, population is mobile-based. Now, I agree that it sucks that there isn't a distinction between both platforms. I would love both platforms to receive slightly different support. I'm sure something could be made for tablet and PC that couldn't be made for phones, right? Like phone is especially small, right? That's one of the things where like mobile and, you know, phone / tablet aren't, you know, equivalent. There's a huge difference between mobile phone and mobile tablet. And I don't know. I really wish Hearthstone had some kind of port differences in that way.
Yeah, it's quite funny actually, going off what you said, Nox. One of the problems Hearthstone has is is how good its mobile client is, and that sounds really weird. But I'm in your boat, Nox. I very rarely play on my phone when like you know, I can't play on anything else and I'm traveling or something. You know, and it's just convenient to just have a quick game if I'm bored or something.
True.
But the issue is if they ever released like content for PC, you know, something tournament mode or whatever for PC and not mobile client, whether it be phone or tablet, there are a lot of people, and I know a lot of people that only play Hearthstone on their phone, and that would be a very, very serious problem if you're upsetting, as you said, a absolutely huge percentage of the player base. For all of us who take Hearthstone at least relatively seriously, and you know everyone who's really committed, of course, like I would love a million different things in the client and ways to move forward, but it is limited by the phone, and it sucks. But I'm sure they're working on it though. Every single time I've spoken to Blizzard staff about, you know, just things like tournament mode, in-depth statistics in your profile, everything everyone said a million times. They're like, okay, but UI has to be simple. Yeah. Phone, you know, mobile, they're very high up on the priority as far as I'm aware. And they have never said they are not looking at these things or trying to do them. They just said it's not something they can just make happen because there's a lot that goes into the development of the mobile app as well as the PC client. So it does suck, but that's where we are, unfortunately. I think it could be worse, though. It could be extremely limited, And Blizzard could be just focused on the mobile client, viewing that as where the money is, where the majority of the player base is. I think the client's cool, and the game overall is decent, but it definitely needs to change. And it does worry me how big the actual Hearthstone app is becoming on phone. It's actually getting pretty large. Yeah,
well,
it's actually
getting literally big. Large.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what their code looks like. You know, definitely being a mobile developer before, I understand all those limitations that they have. And like Loxa said, this game is, I think it would still be successful even with PC only. It's as successful as it is because it's on
mobile.
Huge. It's huge. Mobile, it's, it's making a ton of money for Blizzard because of the mobile users. And you know, there's no other popular PC esport what-ish kind of game that is huge on the PC. That's what makes Hearthstone special. Unfortunately for us, who are really interested in the super high competitive space, that does limit the complexity of the game. I don't think it's anything that we can ever get around, because I don't think the clients will ever be different. I don't think you can have them ever be different unless you actually create a separate app for...
Right,
maybe
like
each of
platform.
The yeah, like if Arena got bigger, you know, and Arena just expanded in the function,
yeah,
the features
like
it has.
Hearthstone
yeah.
Arena,
yeah,
Hearthstone
Arena, Hearthstone,
whatever. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. You can maybe break it up in that way, and honestly, that's more downloads for them. And I mean, they're not running ads, so they're really just doing IAP for revenue. But that could take away some of the load of how big, the app actually is on the phone, because it is. It's going to continue getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But from the standpoint of the real estate for UI, it's not going to change. I mean, our phones are getting a little bit bigger, but even the tablet is a bit restricting in terms of like the minis, right? iPad minis are pretty dang small.
I think as well, Blizzard, I think, another reason Hearthstone is successful is its simplicity. And again, with the UI, the Blizzard want the UI simple. They want it straightforward. They don't. I've played mobile games where I don't even know where to press. You know, there's stuff everywhere, and that is not a nice experience.
Yeah.
And you know, the simplicity of the UI is another huge strength. As much as we think it could be a weakness, it's actually a strength for, guess what, 95%
of the player.
Yeah,
base.
You know what I mean. Like, so you know what, guys, this is life. Majority
it's
wins
not gonna happen
the time.
Exactly.
Like,
so I don't think we're to the point where we've exhausted every little thing that's possible to add, you know, to a mobile client. So, you know, we're not to the point where completely limited. You can't add more than what we got. We're not there yet. So I think we just need to keep working with that in mind, that they can't make some of these changes.
And also, technology is getting better, right? So things will be easier to do, and maybe a reduction in space and stuff, things like that going forward.
Their phone's only so big, like that's the biggest issue. It's like the real estate, the number of pixels.
But there's something that something just came in like an hour ago on Reddit that reads Android optimization, it's down to 1.5 gigs as opposed to 3.
Yeah, but that's just size. I mean, that's good.
That's
great,
you're talking about optimization specifically,
yeah,
and not size, because size has been an issue for a lot of users.
No, we're talking about UI optimization, like the ability to do some more complex things from the standpoint of design.
Right,
the size is something that, in my mind, I've always been surprised it's so big, to be honest. Like, I feel there's a lot of different techniques. Yeah, there's a lot of different techniques I'm sure they could have, could be using, and it sounds like they maybe are starting to use now to get the size down. But in terms of designing, like Red Mana, for instance, right? Like, took it out because they couldn't figure out the best, a great way to do it.
I didn't even hear about this. So what they had Red Mana as what?
Apparently, it's with
I'll tell you what Red Mana was, because I came up with the same idea a long time ago. It's very straightforward. You play a card that gives you red mana, you play another card that consumes red mana or requires a threshold.
Ah, okay,
met.
Sure.
So it's like a second resource system that's not tied to, turn by turn automatic increase. Mm-hmm. You have to play the resource, then consume it.
Yeah.
So
cool. it's like over, you know, just
I guess it didn't display wasted well,
mana.
Right?
Yeah, you can actually go back and you reuse mana that you didn't use before.
It's like a separate pool, right?
Yeah, it's like a right, yeah, it's like a bucket full.
Or an overlay that maybe it's overlaid on top of it, whatever the case may be. Maybe it just, you know, changes the color of one of your manas.
That's a shame, because that's actually what I was discussing earlier about like mechanics just taking that one step further to being a bit more intricate. That sounds cool, man.
No, it is. Yeah. That gives you the ability to, you know, that gives you the ability to invest for future turns instead of having the card be that like force you to, you know, either overload or force you to, you know, like do or buff something, right, as the form of investment.
Yeah.
Mana's, that's cool. You don't have to feel as bad wasting mana too,
especially if it's confined to a pool of cards, right? You can't just use red mana on anything, because we all know how fun Innovate is, you know, stuff like that. But like if it was like a pool of cards that were like red mana cards, like that would be super fun. That's a shame, actually. That's a real shame.
I mean, they already have, so I'll you know, play devil's advocate here, but they already have a similar, you know, mechanic in terms of, hey, here's this 4-mana 3/3 that gives you jack shit right now. It's completely terrible, and you're investing in the potential future outcome, right? So they've done the idea of setting up for later,
conceptually,
you know, acquisition, conceptually already.
It's a simple form, though. That's
right. Yeah. It's in a very simple form, but the point is, from their perspective, there may not be much of a mechanical difference between both, if that makes any sense. To where maybe developing an entire new UI for this is just not worth it, because we can give you, because maybe Kazakus used to be something along those lines, right? Like a decently sized mana required you to have a potion that came up, you know, it cost, you know, a certain amount of red mana, and it had different costs, but maybe it was tied to the red mana mechanic. We'll never know, but maybe they just decided, well, fuck it, let's give it a small body, this guy is terrible on his own, and then the investment is terrible now. So there's a lot of ways you can spin, you know, future investment. And in Hearthstone, the easiest way is shitty body now, crazy effect later.
Okay, well, I think that wraps up the question. So thanks a lot to the TF Boy and Moritz K for sending those questions. And again, if you guys want to get your questions in for next week, go ahead and email those to the valuetown@chainmanv.com. All right, well, why don't we do some shout-outs, wrap up the show. It's been a solid 2 hours, 2 hours plus. Raven, yeah, it's been a pleasure having you on for the first time, and thanks for
awesome,
coming in last minute. But, you know, these discussions obviously were really, really good. Where can people find you? You want to shout out anybody?
Anything? So my Twitter is obviously there, TP_Raven. I play for Torpedo. I stream almost every day when I'm not traveling to an event. So I'll be on one stream or another. But my stream is RavenHS. Very straightforward. Because I got a name change on Twitch.
Yeah,
sick. It didn't used to be that. So now I got RavenHS. So that's awesome. But yeah, I stream like in the day in Europe time. So I do it pretty much every day. Just usual ladder. I play some other games as well, but mainly just ladder. And that's pretty much it.
All right, cool. Noxious?
Yeah, just big shout out to Complex Studios tearing it in the Trinity, which is great to see. I don't know, man.
Did they win?
Amazing. Say what?
Did they win?
I don't know if they won today, but last I checked, it was like 5-1.
They were winning, yeah.
They're just doing complex JJ things.
The 12-0 Murloc Paladin loss against Alliance was a potential. I think at Complexity were like 3-0 up with Murloc Paladin, and last week Alliance lost 0-6 against G2, only against Murloc Paladin.
Oh, that was
amazing. Oh my god. So crazy.
So good, except for against Shaman. So ban Shaman.
Okay, you're
good.
Ban
Shaman, you're good, man.
Yeah, devolve those Murlocs into shitty Murlocs. Let you anything now, baby.
Unfortunately, you can't control the freaking charge ones. Yep. And Barnes gets you another one. It's like, crap, man. Totally sucks.
Too many Murlocs.
Exactly. I guess I'll finish things off by thanking you guys for doing the show today, and the folks that ended up watching. I think with Trinity going on, like we obviously didn't get as many viewers today, but it's all good. We'll figure out this time is actually still good or not. Like, I don't know. Because
Trinity's been going to be going on for a few weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be for another few weeks. We probably should just consider moving it. I don't know. Maybe earlier or something like that. But for those of you that missed some of the show earlier, you can catch it on youtube.com/chainmanv shortly after. And then, of course, on iTunes a little bit later tonight, early morning, you know, whenever iTunes does their update, you can find that there. again, you know, if you guys enjoy it there or don't, you know, you don't have any kind of means to support the show via Patreon, just going and leaving a 5-star review helps out the show greatly too. Think about doing that if you do enjoy the show. But that's going to be it for Valuetown. Oh, one last thing. Valuetown Throwdown. People have been asking me about that. I'm trying to get one planned, gosh, maybe late this week or next week.
Hey,
late next week. Valuetown Throwdowns, the show matches I've been doing. It's been kind of hard with the players playing Trinity and some players traveling. There's another team league soon. So the players are just going to be super busy trying to get that in. But I do have a couple more cool, you know, formats and cool things to show you guys. That's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm really excited about getting a chance to even do that. We'll do that very, very soon. So keep a lookout on Twitter, twitter.com/ShamManV. I'll let you guys know whenever that does happen. But that's going to be it for Valuetown this week. So for Raven, Noxious, and myself, ShamManV, we'll see you next week.
The greatest and suddenest storms on record is experienced here today. Band was playing and there was a dead calm. A little after midnight came a strange sound from over the sea, and high overhead the air began to carry a strange, faint, hollow booming. Then, without warning, the tempest broke.